जय विष्णुपालपरमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमान अभय शरणारविंद भक्तिवेदांत गोस्वामी महाराज शील प्रभुपाद की जय नितिलीला प्रविष्ट विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमान भक्त सिद्धांत सरस्वती महाराज शील प्रभुपाद की आनंदगोड़ी वैष्णव वृंद की नामाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम सहो श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोविनाथ श्यामकुंड राधाकुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की वृंदावन धाम की मायापुर धाम की मदनपुरी धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की द्वारकापुरी धाम की गंगा माई की यमुना माई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी की सामवेद भक्त वृंद की गौर प्रेमानंदी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू असेंबल डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरुवन गौरंग ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्रील प्रभुपाद नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्ण प्रसाय भूतले श्रीमति भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशधारिणी ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोऽभीष्टम् स्थापिताम् येन भूतले स्वयम् रूपगदा मह्यम् ददाति स्वपदाम् दियम् वन्देऽहम् श्रीगुरु श्रीयुधापदकमलम् श्रीगुरुम् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपम् साग्रजातम् सहगणरघुनाथान्वितम् तम् सजीवम् सद्वैतम् सावधूतम् परिजनासहितम् कृष्णचैतन्यदेवम् श्रीराधा कृष्णपदाम् सहगण ललिताम् श्रीविशाखान्विदांश्च नमोऽहम् विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले श्रीमदे भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनि नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवीम् गौरवाणी प्रजारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशधारिणे नमोऽहम् विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले श्रीमदे भक्तिसिद्धान्त सरस्वती नामिने श्री वर्षमानविदेवी दैदाय कृपाब्दये कृष्ण सम्बन्ध विज्ञानदायिने प्रभवे नमः माधुर्योज्ज्वल प्रेमाद्या श्रीरूपानुगभक्तिदा श्रीगौरकरुणा शक्ति विग्रहाय नमोऽस्तुते नमस्ते गौरवाणी श्रीमूर्तये दीनदारिणे रूपानुगविरुद्धाभसिद्धान्तद्वन्द्वहारिणे नमो गौरकिशोराय साक्षाद् वैराग्यमूर्तये विप्रलम्बरसाम्बोधे पदाम्बुजाय ते नमः नमो भक्तिविनोदाय सच्चिदानन्दनामिने गौरशक्तिस्वरूपाय रूपनुगौराय ते गौराविर्भवभूमेस्त्वम् निर्देष्टा सज्जनप्रिया वैष्णवा सार्वभौम श्रीजगन्नाथाय ते नमः वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः नमो महावदन्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायिते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्यनाम्ये गौरत्वशी नमः पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तशात्विकम् हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगल्पदे गोपेश गोपिका कान्ता राधा कान्त नमोऽस्तु ते सुरदौपाङ्गोर्मम मन्दमदीर्घजी उपस्य पदाम्भोजौ राधा मदनमोहनौ दिव्यवृन्दारण्यकल्पद्रुमाद श्रीमन्रत्नाकर सिंहासनस्थो श्रीमन्राधा श्रीलगोविन्द देवो प्रेष्टालिभिः सेव्यमानौ स्मरामि श्रीमन्रासरसारम्भी वंशी वटतटस्थिता कर्षन्वेणुसमीर्गोपैर्गोपीनाथा श्रियेस्तुना तप्तकाञ्चनगौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे,
हरे
राम 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 हरे हरे।
अर्थाय प्रतिपोदिताम् भगवदाम् नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रदिदाम् पुराणमुनिनाम् मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणी भगवतीमष्टादशाध्यायिनी अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धदामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी। नमोऽस्तु ते व्यासविशालबुद्धे कुलारविन्दायतपत्रनेत्र येन त्वया भारततैलपूर्णप्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमयप्रदीपा प्रपन्नपारिजाताय त्वत्र वेत्रैकबाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः। सर्वोपनिषदो गावो दोद्रा गोपालनन्दन पार्थो वल्ससुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धम् गीतामृतम् महत् वसुदेवसुतम् देवम् कंसच्चाणूरमर्दनम् देवकी परमानन्दम् कृष्णम् वन्दे जगद्गुरुम्। भीष्मद्रोणदण्ड जयद्रथजला गान्धार नीलोत्पला शल्यग्राहवती कृपेण वहनी कर्णेन वेलाकुला अश्वत्थामा विकर्ण घोरमकरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनि सुतीर्ण खलु पाण्डवैरण नदी कैवर्तक केशवा पाराशर्यवज सरोजममलम् गीतार्थगन्धोत्कटम् नानाख्यानगकेसरम् हरिकथा सम्बोधनाबोधितम् लोकैः सज्जनषल्पदैरहरः पेडीयमानम् मुदा भूयाद्भारतभङ्गजकलिमलप्रध्वंसिनश्रेयसे। मुखम् करोति वाचालम् पङ्गुम् लङ्घयदे गिरिम् यत्कृपातमहम् वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम् यम् ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुदस्त्वन्वन्दि दिव्यैस्तवैर्वेदैर्सङ्गपदैर्क्रमोपनिषदैर्गायम् सामगाः ध्यानमवस्थितद्गदेन मनसा पश्यन्तियम् योगिनो यस्यान्दम् न विदुसुरासुरगणे देवाय तस्मै Stotram. We have seen two verses. Acharya Swamiji asked the first question, Kastam Shisho Kasya Kutosi Gandhaha Kim Namate Tvam Kuda Agadosi Edan Mayoktam Vada Cha Bhagatvam Malpritaye Priti Vivardhanosi. O child, who are you? Whose son are you? Where are you going? What's your name? From where have you come? O young one, please tell me what I have asked you for the sake of my love, since you ever increase my love. That was the question from Acharya to Astamalaka. Astamalaka Vacham, Na aham manushyo, na cha deva yakshau, na brahmana kshatriya vaishya shudraha, na brahmachari na grihi vanastho, bhikshur na chaham nijabodha rupam. I am not a man, not even deva or god or a yaksha, not brahmin kshatriya vaishya shudra, not a brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha or sannyasa. I am of the nature of the knowledge of the self. That's the two first verses we have discussed so far. And then we have seen the third verse. Nimittam manachakshuradi pravurtau nirastagilodhi rakshasa kalpa akasha kalpam revir loga cheshta nimittam yathaya sa nityo baladhi swarupoham alma. That is the third verse, isn't it? Who is the cause for the activities of the mind and the eyes, is devoid of all limiting adjuncts like space, just as the sun is the cause for all worldly activities, but is the witness, I am of the nature of that ever-existing alma, that which is the cause for the activities of the mind and the eyes. This is what we were talking about it, isn't it? Important thing is nimittam chakshuradi pravrtau. Nimittam manachakshuradi pravrtau nirasakthagilo lodhi akashakalpam revir loka cheshtam cheshta nimittam yathaya స నిత్యోపలబ్ధ స్వరూపోహం ఆత్మా నిత్యోపలబ్ధ స్వరూపం. హియర్ యూ కెన్ సీ దట్ ఇన్ దట్ వర్స్ ఇన్ ద థర్డ్ వర్స్ నిమిత్తం మనఃచక్షురాది ప్రవృత్తో నిమిత్తం మనఃచక్షురాది ప్రవృత్తో. హియర్ సమ్వన్ ఈజ్ గివింగ్ ఎన్ ఎగ్జాంపుల్ హియర్. వాట్ ఈస్ అన్ ఎగ్జాంపుల్? ఎగ్జాంపుల్ ఇస్ దట్ నిరస్తాఖిలౌ ఉపాధి ఆకాశకల్పం. Ravi means sun. Sun god is called Ravi. Ravi is another name for the sun. So here he is saying here that when sun rises in the morning, so many things happens in this world, isn't it? All living entities comes into action with the rise of the sun. And not only that, that means living entities are dependent on the sun for their existence here. When sun rises, we all come into action. And when sun sets, the moon comes in. Moon comes in. And this moon is nothing but a reflection of the sun. After all, moon gets its light from the sun. That's what even scientists agree on, that it's reflected by the moon. Is it not? So even though it is a reflection of the sun, that rishis are saying to us, Shastram is also saying to us, that wherever the sun planet is, sun is present, wherever it may be, every jiva in this world is connected with him all the time. Either directly or indirectly through the moon. Directly through the sun we are connected during the day. We may think that how are we connected? There is no sunshine. That's not the truth. As soon as there is some light outside, sun rays are present there. And that light, so Krishi's opinion is that, not opinion, it's their verdict on this, that every jiva in this world, from its subtle body, it has a connection with the sun. And it will always be connected, all time. Sun is connected with us, all the time. From the subtle body, through the rays of the sun, in a very subtle level it is connected. So, only difference is that during the daytime, it is connected a little bit more than during night. Because of the direct effect of the sun's presence there. But even in the night time, indirectly through the moon's rays, we are connected. To the sun or the moon, we are connected. And that relationship is never broken with the sun for all living entities in this world. If there is no sun planet, no life is possible in this earth. That's a known thing. So daytime as well as the night time, the living entity exists due to the mercy of the sun. Due to the presence of the sun alone, we exist in this planet. We exist in this planet. So, therefore, when the sun is moving in this creation, we are all coming into action. And this energy to function, movement, to engage in different actions, and all kinds of vyavaharam, all these things coming from where? From the sun. Our ability to conduct vyavaharam, to work in this world, and also to move around, all this power is provided by the sun planet. But is sun doing anything? When you look at him, he is not doing anything. Because only his presence is sufficient. His presence is sufficient. That is what Astamalaka is saying here. That you will see that Revir Loka Cheshta Nimittam Yathaya. Simply by his cheshta, Ravi's cheshta, Ravi means sun, simply by sun's cheshta, presence here, that he is saying here, nimittam yathaya, everything is happening in this creation. And therefore he says, nimittam mana chakshuradi pravurto, nirastagilobhadi agasha kalpa. So here, that sun is not particularly doing anything, and he is not forcing us to do anything, but his very presence is sufficient to enthuse us to come to action. We come to action just by, when the sun is there, we want to get things done. Is it not? So similarly, sun is present there, that is sufficient for us. So, and all the vyavaharam, all the actions, transactions in this world goes on with that. Yatha revihi, says, revir loka cheshta nivitam yathaya. So sun is a cause for the functioning of this world, of all the living entities, movement, actions, everything happens in the presence of the sun, just being present here. So, and that's what I say, saying here, revir loka cheshta nimittam yathaya. Revi's presence in the logam is sufficient for the cheshta, for all things to happen here. So, tatha yatha manascha churashi pravurto. Similarly, in the same way, Hamstamalaka is saying there, in the same way, Atma being present inside is sufficient for the mind, for all the senses, all of them to function. Atma's presence is sufficient. Atma's presence is sufficient. Like when the sun is present, we engage in action. Is it not? Similarly, Astavalka is saying there, just if the Atma is present inside, that's more than enough. Its very presence is sufficient. Like the sun's presence is sufficient to engage us in action. Similarly, Atma's presence inside is sufficient for the mind, for the intelligence, for our senses, all of them to operate. Atma's presence is sufficient. Atma doesn't have to do anything, just being present there. That's sufficient for that. So that is what it is saying here. So only when Atma is present there, all these things will work. Which one? The mind, the intelligence, the senses, everything will work. So otherwise, if Atma is not there, they're not there. That's why you can see a dead body when the Atma is left. Where is all the senses then? Where is all the mind? Where is the intelligence? Everything gone as soon as the Atma leaves the body. Is it not? Once a dead body, even if you feed some nice sweet rice to that dead body, he won't enjoy it, would it? Similarly, you bring a flower to smell, he won't smell. If you show some nice photograph, he can't look. Even if you keep the eyes wide open, it has no impact on the person. So our Astavalaka is saying without his presence inside, none of these things can function. Presence is sufficient. It doesn't have to do anything. That is Atma. Astavalaka is trying to explain to us what Atma means. Atma's unique position is like that. Just being present is sufficient. Nothing more is required. That's Atma. We sometimes otherwise imagine things in our head about Atma. The size of, people want to know how big is it. And where is he staying inside the body? All questions will come. Have you seen him? They will ask. So, to avoid all that, he's saying here, his unique nature is that his presence, he's present everywhere, but when he's present inside, only this mind, intelligence, ego, senses, everything can work. Otherwise, it cannot work. There is some unusual relationship like that, that just by being very presence of it, things happen. So, in Kathopanishad, you will see this. Najigedas asks this question to Yama. He says to him, what happens after death? What happens after death? Yama says, don't ask me about what happens after death, he said. Yama says to Najigedas that. So, while living now in this world, one who is sitting inside that body, and who look through the eyes and sees the things, and who sits inside and hears everything through the ears, and who tastes everything through the tongue, and who smells everything through the nose, and when he closes his eyes, who creates a lot of thought waves inside, think about all these things. That's how Najigedas was sent back by Yama. Now Jesus told him, go back and think like this. This way you start thinking. That by whose presence, that even when, don't ask me about after the death what happens. This is while living in a person. Because Najigedas' question wants to understand from Yama. Yama is one of the authorities on the knowledge of the self. So he's asking Yama, who is it that who is doing this? So he mentions to him that Najiyadas wanted to know about Atma. So he is explaining to him in this way. Yama started. Don't ask me after death what happens, but while living itself, let's start from there. While living itself, by who is sitting inside you and through the eyes goes and sees things. In other words, Atma is the one who is actually seeing. We are not seeing. We are just dead matter. Five material elements joined together, this body. But when he is present, you can see it is he who is seeing through the eyes. It is he who is seeing through the hearing through the ears, smelling through the nose, tasting through the tongue and touching through the skin, and all senses are working because of him, and he is the one who is the cause behind it. So he told him, go home and think about this, he says to Nachiketas. So, and similarly he said, when you go to sleep at night, what happens at that time? When he sleeps at night, he says that what will happen at the time when he sleeps? When he sleeps at night, that is more important, he said. He should think about that. Ya esha, Yama is saying, ya esha supteshu jagrati. That when you are in the deep sleep state, kamam kamam purusho nirmimanaha, tadeva shukram tal brahmam, tadeva amrtam uchyate, tasmin loka ha shri taha sarvedi unatyadi kaschana edadvai tad. This is how he introduces the Atma to Nachiketas. What is he saying is that esha supteshu jagarti kamam kamam purusho nirmimana. Kamam kamam purusho nirmimana. That means that according to the jiva, living entity, according to their karma, whatever they have conducted in this world, somebody is offering the results for that, is it not? Somebody is approving, that's why you are getting the results. Who does that? That's how Yama asked the question. Who is doing that from inside? And that same Andaryami inside, who is present and who is doing that? Kamam kamam purusho nirmimana. All his desires, according to his actions, it's provided the results. Tadeva shukram tal brahmam tadevam amrtam uchyate. And that Brahmam, Brahma Tattvam, is Amrdam. It is nectar, and it is its very nature of that Tattvam inside. Andaryami is always liberated, and it is that Super Soul. And he says here, Tadeva Shukram Tal Brahmam Tadevam Amrdam Uchyate, and Tasmim Lokaha Shudaha. Then he himself is present as Jivalma, who this Andaryami is present as Jivatma in us all. How does he become a Jivatma? When he reflects in the Andhakaranam. Andhakaranam means in the subtle body, where we are filled up with our vasanas and chitavrti. It is in the vasanas reflection of the Andaryami is called a Jiva. That is why when Andaryami mixes with this, he immediately acquires all the vasanas of the Jiva. Ahangaram comes in and he is called Jiva at that time. And when Ahangaram goes away, Vasanas goes away, he joins back the Paramatma again and he becomes Andaryami. Then there is no Jiva left after that. This is the Vedanti conception about this. Vedantam, it is like that. So, so he says here that still this karmam is finished. Vasanas are over, gone away, vasana praksham it's called. Vasanas goes away, karma vasana goes away. That, till then, Jiva has only one choice. He has to keep moving through different bodies, one after the other. Cycle of birth and death, in other words. And he will continue to go rotating through these different bodies. And when the karma is over, karma bondage is finished, karma vasana is finished, karma is over, he goes back to Jivatvam has gone and he gets back its pure identity of the Atma. Same as Satachita Anandam, as the Andaryami there. and he is present Brahmadatvam. Shtadeva Shukram Tal Brahmam Tadevam Amrdamuchyate. He is present in everyone's heart in the form of Antaryami. And what is interesting more than that, when everybody else is sleeping, that means when you are sleeping or when you are in the Sushupti state, when the mind is not there, Ahankaram is not there, intelligence is not there, or senses are not operating, even at that time he is awake. Antaryami is awake at that time. And not only that, he says that Tadeva Tasmim Lokashrina Sarved Unashchedi Kashchana Edadvai Tada. And he says, even at the time of devastation, when everything happens, he is still awake. And he says to him, Nachiketas, he is the one whom you are talking about. Whom you are talking about, he says to him. So, we can see that when we are sleeping, he is awake. He is still awake. We don't know that, do we? We know that when you go to deep sleep state, particularly in the deep sleep state, body is not there, mind is not there, intelligence is not there. Even ahankaram, ego has gone, senses have gone. But then somebody has to be awake to keep the body going, and that's it. We are still breathing. How is that? We have no idea how it's going on, even when we are in the deep sleep state. We are still breathing, and all the functions, food is getting digested, isn't it? Whatever you have eaten for the dinner, it has to be prepared for the morning to leave the body. And who is organizing all these things? That's the Rishi's conclusion. Rishis are saying that Antaryami is supervising everything all the time. That is why this modern science and modern medicine and all that, what do they understand about this body? Absolutely nothing. They know how to do some operations and give you some paracetamol and relieve your pain and all that. But apart from that, this body's real identity is how the Rishis have spoken about it. They are telling us that to so clear the presence of Krishna inside as Antaryami, operating and doing all these things, looking after us in the day and night, in the vacant state, dream state, deep sleep, and all these three states, he is constantly with us, involved in one way or the other. And still we say, where is the proof? We are asking, for what proof do you want more than this? How can you ask for any proof anymore? So that is the question here. And so when you are vacant state, in your vacant state, the desires, that's what vacant state means, isn't it? All the desires are operating in the vacant state. And in that vacant state, what does he do? He creates a lot of desires inside us. That's all he does. He creates a lot of desires inside. And based on those desires, different sankalpam, imaginations in our head. Imaginations in our head. And then based on the desires and our imagination, the dreams. He creates the dreams also. Who does that? Antaryami does that. It's all Antaryami's job. Antaryami creates the desires in us, because if he's not there, desires won't come. If he is not there, the sankalpam, different imaginations, whatever we have, they won't happen. All that is happening is because of Antaryami's presence. And it is this very same Antaryami that he creates the dream for us in the night according to his plan. We don't know what we are going to dream tonight, isn't it? But it will come at the time when dream comes. And who is behind it? Antaryami is behind it. And he is constantly, his presence is sufficient. Presence is sufficient. And who is that? Yamadharma Raja is saying to Nachiketas at that time. So, one who is present inside, even when the body is lying in a deep sleep state, but who is present inside, he creates the dream and he is seeing the dream as well. You notice that. When you are dreaming, you must have observed this, that whole dream is going through you and you are separately watching the dream. Isn't it? All the time you are experiencing that the dream is going through me. So, And therefore he says, when he creates this dream, what's interesting there is that you don't need a mirror in the dream. You can see. Without a mirror you are seeing. It's another kind of perception, isn't it? In the vacant state you need a dream to look at what is there. To see yourself, you want to look, do anything you want to see, you need a dream, and you look through the mirror and see what's happening. But in the dream state, you can see things. All those senses are not working. Senses are not working. You don't need the light also. Still you can see without the light. Because there is another light inside. And that light, in that light you can see this dream very well. That's what it's called, a dream, isn't it? So, and that is why, you see that word, how in the Vedam these words are, he's called Taijasan at that time. Taijasan. Vacant state is called Vishwan. Dream state is called Taijasan. And Sushupti state is called Prajnan. It will come in the 12th canto. When you look at the Bhagavatam, you will see there. And the word is precisely telling what the soul does in each of these three states. In vacant state, in the dream state, and in the deep sleep. In the vacant state, he is Vishwan. Vishwan means he is connected with the world. Vishwan is the world. He is connected with the world. Therefore, he is called Vishwan. If you go into the dream state, what he does there, he is illuminating everything without the presence of light. And he is giving you all the results, all the you can experience it in the dream state, without the presence of light, sound, or any external things. He is capable of presenting everything to you in that dream state. Therefore, Tejas it is called. Tejas of the Antaryami is Tejas, that is. Therefore, he is called in the dream state as Taijasan. And then when you go into the deep sleep state, what happens then? Everything is gone, shut down, isn't it? But that consciousness, he remains purely as consciousness, without doing anything. Therefore, it is called the Prajna, or therefore he is called the Prajnan. In that state. Prajna is his job at that time. Prajna, pure consciousness. And therefore he is called Prajna in the deep sleep state. In the deep sleep state. So just at least 2 days ago, I was watching this program. I have to say this. It's called about the same issue, about this Hadron Collider. They brought a program about it, very new one. Right up to the end of December, what they have done and what they have not done. I don't know, they were saying, talking about something like 20-30 billion pounds they have spent on this. And it is supposed to have the best brain in the world working there. Best brain in the world is working there. From 40-50 different countries, they are operating in this huge enterprise. They have built this huge tunnel. And the machinery, what they have created there to find out God particle. Isn't they're searching for the God. Yeah. And if you watch the program, somehow or the other, I don't know what the influence, where it's coming from. Program begins with a picture of Lord Shiva first. Lord Shiva is that Nataraja form, dancing, Shiva dancing with the four hands. And it begins with that picture of Shiva. And then it ends the program also with the Shiva dancing. Program is made by BBC and they have shown this whole thing, what is going on there. And all the brains that's working there for all this. You just start thinking about these people. What are you supposed to say to them? You think that they are all highly, completely caught up in the mind and the intelligence. Can't go any more beyond than that. If you show about this to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Shankaracharya, they will laugh at it. It's looking at our dull-headed things. What more can I say? They'll be simply shocked by what human body is capable of doing. The stupidity. The aparavidya, avidya. It's an absolute proof is that Hadron Collider. They say they have found out that H, Higgins boson element or whatever. Whatever they may find, at the end, we have to come to this understanding. What Hastamalika is saying here. That he's saying that who is behind all these things? And these people, so much money spent on all these things, so many people maintained and paid and looked after. It is unbelievable what goes on. So anyway, what Acharya is saying here, what Hasanulya is saying here, It's only due to the presence of that Atma, the whole creation is sustained by Him. It is in Him we are experiencing the creation. And the whole cheshta, that means the prapancham or creation, is working due to the presence of that vastu inside, and the Antaryami inside. And that is what is being pointed out here. Who, some guy saying there, that his point is, nimittam manas chakshuradi pravrutau nirastakilobhadi agashakalpam revir loga cheshta nimittam yathaya sa nityobalabdhi swarubaham alma. Nityobalabdhi swarubaham alma, that swarubam alma swarubam, he says, that is nityobalabdhi. It is already available to all of us, every one of us, every one of us. The difficulty is that because these people are so much educated in that way, to learn through the mind and the brain, that's all what they know. They can't imagine there is something beyond the thing called mind and intelligence. And they are stuck in that, and with that intelligence they are working this way, that way, this way, that way. Whole day busy with equations and all other, whatever things what they are doing. You can watch the program, you will really see the head, how people's head is working. And as I was saying to you before, a person who is not educated, he will understand Krishna consciousness a lot easier than a person who is educated. The educated ones are the one who is causing all the problems in this world. And they think that this ego that builds up from that education, that comes from that, that causes further destruction in this world. So he says, nimittam mana chakshuradi pravrutau, manasa, chakshusa, shrotram, all the senses are working by whom? Who is behind it? Antaryami there. Nirastahilobhadi agasha kalpam, and he is present everywhere, like the sky. Revir loka cheshta nimittam yathaya, just like the presence of sun is sufficient for people to engage in action. Similarly, his presence inside is more than sufficient for the senses and the mind to work. Sa nityobalabdhi swarupaham alma. Aswamalaga, who won't speak to anybody, this is coming straight away with the truth. Nityobalabdhi, he is present to us all the time. Swarupam, as our identity, alma. So Yamadharmaraja says to him that Nachiketas, that vastu you are inquiring after is that alma inside. And it is only due to his presence the body is functioning. And this you can see in the Bhagavadam very clearly. Only thing, you have to look a little deeper into Bhagavadam. How? For example, Dhruva Maharaj performed severe penances, is it not? He performed very severe penances. And what happened? Krishna came in front of him, conch shell, disc, lotus flower, club, everything, in the Shankha, Chakram, Gada, all those things, and he appeared in front of him and came and stood in front of Dhruva Maharaj. You can look at all the glorifications in the Bhagavatam. You will see this one phenomenon happening all the time. What is that? So, when they see Krishna's form, and or before seeing Krishna's form also, they will glorify the form. They will glorify the form first. Krishna's form they will glorify. But after they have seen the form, they will leave glorification, and then it is all Upanishad. You have to study Bhagavatam. Only then you will notice this. These are the subtle side of the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is Vedantam, nothing but Vedantam. But to get this point across, there are so many great personalities performing penances there in the Bhagavatam. Dhruva Maharaj's penances, if you look, you will see there. He has seen the form. As soon as he saw the form, he stopped glorifying the form anymore and moved on to Upanishads. Upanishads what? There is no more description of the form then. Because you will be amazed that why is it like that? Vasudev did the same thing. Devaki did the same thing. Look into Bhagavatam yourself when you have time. You have to spend some time at home in all these things. And that is how you create that understanding better inside. That why is it like that? You are seeing the form. Krishna's appeared in front of you. You're not spending much time glorifying the beauty of Krishna. Rather, you go back to Upanishad straight away and start talking about who Krishna is. Who Krishna is, you're going to talk about it. So, you may start thinking, when you're seeing Krishna directly like that, should you not glorify that form, what you're seeing there? said, because Krishna is saying here that actually that is also not my form. How do you know that? Because if you know realized souls, if you have seen them, then you will know that. When you see the realized souls. Because when you see the realized souls in this world, many great personalities you will see, it is not their form that is attracting us. You can take anybody, for example. In the recent times, for example, take Srila Prabhupada, take Ramana Maharshi, take any of the great personalities who appeared and presented Krishna consciousness. Would you say you are attracted by that form itself? It's very difficult. Apparently, it is not the external form that is attracting. What it is that, what is their beauty? Their beauty is that when you are in their presence, there is something from them that affects you. That affects you. And it will influence us in such a way that as soon as in their presence, if you go and sit there, that our mind turns inwards. It does not go into the world. This will always happen. Particularly in the realized souls. Particularly realized souls. If you sit in front of them, in their close proximity, what is the impact they have on us? That this mind, which is always busy in the world outside, it leaves the world and start going inwards. This is the effect of these jnani, or devotees, or realized personalities. They all have this impact on us. Physically, if you look at them, I wouldn't say they are not like film stars or anybody, like who are dressed up and or celebrities, isn't it? That's what you look at the form for. Would you won't find that beauty in the personalities like that? But then what is their beauty? Their beauty is that their realization inside, Krishna's presence inside them has a direct impact on us immediately, and we turn inwards straight away. Immediately we leave the world and creates an interest in us for realizing the truth. Their inquiry begins straight away. And that creates an illumination inside. And not that we see the form and we start saying, oh, your eyes are looking beautiful, your nose is looking beautiful, your dress is looking beautiful, all your danda is looking beautiful. We don't say that. That is ajnanam it is. Seeing the form and thinking like that. Isn't it? Or we don't say your nose is very beautiful, head looks very beautiful with the shikha and all that. So we won't do that. Why? Because that is not their beauty. Their beauty is not the body. Their beauty is their realization inside. So many other people also, in the Ramana Maharshi's case, and say Ramana Maharshi, if you look at it, he didn't have any clothes even. All he had was a cow bean. If you look at his photographs, you will see an old person who had full of arthritis in his body, cancer in his body, and he was struggling, whole shaved up, with a stick in the hand, he was walking around. But in his presence, people felt that effect. That effect also. So externally, if you look at them, there is no beauty. Externally, if you look at them, there is no beauty. And if you look at their limbs or the bodily different parts of the body, there's nothing you can say they're very beautiful in that sense, from our mundane sense in that way. But if you have seen them, and at the same time, if you have keep on looking at them, you will see that it is not due to that form that is creating the impact inside. Instead, that knowledge of the self and the realization of the self, that is having the impact on us. Impact on us. Practically, therefore, and that is not what you are seeing there. That's not what you are seeing there. And this is why, when Dhruva Maharaj saw, if you look at Dhruvastuti, you will see, as soon as he saw Krishna, what did he say? Yonda pravishya mimavaja mimam prasuptam sanjeevayatyagila shaktidhara sudham naham anyamscha hastacharanam shravanam togadin pranannamo bhagavade purushaya tubhyam. The first verse itself. He's not talking about the body of Krishna, beauty of the Krishna. Instead, what did he say? That by whose presence inside me, that Krishna is like a mirror. Krishna is like a mirror. He said, that is why Dhruva is saying like that. That yanda pravishya imamacham imam prasuttam. That it is you who is present inside me and making me to speak. Like a mirror. Like a mirror, he is seeing Krishna inside. As soon as he saw Krishna, that's what he said. It's you who is present inside me, making me to speak, making me to hear, making me to walk, making me to do things, making me to smell, all the senses activity. Yo andapravishya mama vaja imam prasuptam sanjeevayati akhila shakti dhara sudhamnam anyamscha hasta charana shravana togadin pranan namo bhagavate purushayatubhyam. If you are not inside me, I couldn't do anything. This was the first realization from Dhruva to Krishna. You see, in the Bhagavatam? So that is the most important thing to know. That as soon as you see Krishna inside, all realized souls have said this. They won't wait to glorify. Instead, normally we would have expected that, oh, you have seen beautiful form of Krishna. You would sit there and glorify every part of the body and start talking about the beauty. No. Immediately they switch to Upanishads. This is how the realization is, always, he says there. So he said there that one who is present inside all the time and who is keeping the senses operating through the mind and who gives the potency to speak. That means five senses of knowledge is working by him. Five senses of action, Yanindriyam and Karmendriyam, both of them are working due to his presence inside. And who makes this body able to function in this world? Who is that? He's asking that. And to that person, I pay my obeisances. This is how he paid the obeisances, Dhruvastuti. If you look, you will see that. Pranan namo bhagavade purushaya tubhyam. Pranan namo bhagavade purushaya tubhyam. And that, who is present like that inside, that avabhodam, awareness, inside, and he is Atma Vastu, he is Atma. And here, some guy is saying, Nityobhalabdhi Swarupoham Atma. That Atma is present in everyone. Nityam Ubalabdhi. Say, Kodastam Adipurusho Bhagavan Stradishaha. If you look into the fourth canto of the Bhagavadam, you will see there that the Dhruvastuti, there is from verse 6 to 17. That means 12 verses. That is Dhruvastuti. Famous it is in the Bhagavatam. Dhruva's glorifications. So you will see there, Yam, Tvam, this is what he had to say after seeing Krishna there. He says to him, Tvam, Nityamukta Parishuddha Vibuddhama Atma. Kudastamadi Purusho Bhagavam Tradishaha Yad Buddhyavastidi Akhandidaya Sudrishtya Drashtastida Adhimakha Vidiriktamase. That is the verse 15. Tvam Nityamukta Parishuddha Vibuddhama Alpa. Krishna is standing there and this is what Dhruva is telling him. See that? Krishna is standing there and Dhruva is telling him this. What is that? Tvam nitya mukta parishuddha vibuddha malma. What we say, nitya buddha mukta swarupam. Nitya shuddha buddha mukta swarupam, that's what you are saying to Krishna. Then kodastam adi purusho bhagavam tradishaha. Kodastam is kodastam, isn't it? Inside, you remember that word comes in the Bhagavad Gita many times, kodastam. Adi Purushan, Bhagavam Tradisha, Yad Buddhi Avastidi Akhandidaya Sudrishtyam, Drashtastidavadhi Makho Vidrikta Mase. So, here you can see that awareness which is addressed in the Bhagavatam as self, the knowledge in the beginning, And that is what Hastamalaka is also saying here. What is he saying? Nimittam manas chakshuradi pravurtau. What Dhruva said is not different than what he is saying here. Nimittam manas chakshuradi pravurtau. Nirastagilo bhadi alma agashakalpam. Revirloka cheshta nimittam yathaya sa nityobalabdhi surubo hamalma. What Dhruva Maharaj has spoken in his glorifications, in the same words more or less, Samalaka is saying the same thing about Krishna, about Krishna, who is present inside. So he says here that by whose presence alone the mind, the senses, all my sense of intelligence are all functioning and able to perform their vyavaharam in this world. Vyavaharam in this world. And once who leaves, if when one leaves, when he leaves, if you go and sing a song in front of that body, nothing will happen, would it? It's dead body then. Why we say that? Because he has left. Who? Krishna has left that time. Or even if you dance in front of him, nothing will happen. And he cannot experience anything anymore. That person, and not only that, present in everyone all the time, and all the time keeping us aware with this aham, 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 awareness inside, present all the time. And that person is Nityobalabdhi. He is available all the time, and that is our Swarupam. Swarupoham Alma. That is our Swarupam. So Hastamalaka's reply, he said, I am not Brahmana Kshatriya Vaishyashudra, I am not Brahmachari Grastham Vanaprastham Sannyasam, I am Nityobalabdhi Swarupoham Alma. I am that. That realization he is confirming there. So Nityobalabdhi, that is where the interesting part of it, that Nityobalabdhi. Nityobalabdhi means that Nityobalabdhi means that I'm not only present in your body or my body. About him, Alma he is talking about. It's not only he is present in me alone, but I am present in everywhere because I am him. Once you become that Alma, then Atma is present everywhere, is it not? You are not limited to the body anymore. We are now limited to this body. Why? Because we have no realization of the self. Once you realize the self, you become that Atma who is present everywhere, not limited to. That is when they say Upadhi Vedam has gone. Upadhis have gone. Upadhis is translated in that English translation as adjuncts. That's the right word, I think. For Upadhi, an English word is called adjuncts. Adjuncts is the word for Upadhi. Upadhi means it is limiting us to this body otherwise. Mind, intelligence, ego, senses, all of them are limiting us to this body. Once they have gone, the pure spirit consciousness inside is not limited by the body anymore. It's present everywhere. Like Sukadeva Goswami state, you remember in the Bhagavadam, Tam Sarvabhuta Hridayam, Manimana Tosmi. So if you ask the question at that time, who you are, he is not the body, he is not the mind, all these are upadhis or adjuncts. And upadhi, he say, is something that restricts you, your pure identity. It is restricted by that. Once the upadhis are gone away, if you removed all the upadhis like the body, the mind, intelligence, then what is he saying here? Nirastagil upadhi akashakalpam. He says, when upadhis are removed, nirastha, he says there, nirastagil agila upadhi akashakalpam. Once the upadhis are taken away, then you are like the sky, which is present everywhere. Upadhis have gone. When you have upadhi, then you are limited to one body. Nirastagil upadhi akashakalpam. Akhila upadhi akashakalpam. Then you are very much like akasham with the space or sky. So, but how is he present when the upadhis are present there? How does he function within this body? Or like the sky, still he is like the sky inside. But Hastamalaka is saying here, it is not something that you have to get it later. It's already there, available to you inside us, Antaryami. He is present inside us, Antaryami. And it is not something you have to get later.
Like we have always this misunderstanding that I will become spiritual when I go back home, back to Godhead. Now in this world I have to live in a one way. But when everything is, when I'm dead and gone, then my spiritual life will become, when I get my spiritual body, they say. Now I don't have my spiritual body, I got my material body. So we get into all these kind of things. But you can see where this problem is coming from. That when you don't recognize what Atma is, when you don't understand, then you will naturally think limited to the body, everything. But actually our permanent identity is not limited to the body. Our identity is actually Nityobalabdhi Suryubhoham Atma. What he is saying here is Nirasagil Vabhari Akashakalpam. It's like the sky. We are completely devoid of all kinds of identities, all kinds of limiting agents. No limitations anywhere. That's our nature. That's when Sudeva Goswami walked in, he took the body and came out when he wanted to come with a particular form. He came in, isn't it? When he came to talk to Parikshit, he came in a particular form and he wanted. If you say that is Sudeva Goswami's body, he will laugh at you. He won't accept that. That's not his form. That's the form he has taken. Similarly, you will see the Niminavayogi Samvadam, the nine sages, they are all coming from the sky with the one form. They are appearing. And King Nimi saw these Navayogis coming in and he says, Avyahateshtakdaya Surasiddha Sadhya Gandharva Yaksha Naraginnara Nagalogan. They can go to any planet anywhere they like and they accept any form they like according to the particular. When they come here, they accept a human form. When they go to the Gandharva's planet, they accept a Gandharva's body. That freedom they have to change. Not like the way we change to spacesuit. Not that way. Spacesuit, only one space you can go. And then that also, you're not guaranteed you'll be safe in that spacesuit. These are the people who found out this Hadron Collider. They are the ones who are doing all these things. It's crazy. Anyway, so that is important thing here, that here, Nityobalabdhi Surubaham Alpma. That means, Upalabdhi means that he is so close to you. Nobody else is more closer to you than him. Right there inside, he is present there. And Upalabdham. Upalabdham means Brihad Upalabdham. Brihad Upalabdham means, Bhagavatam uses the word Brihad Upalabdham. Brihad Upalabdham. Here, Asamala uses this Upalabdhi. Upalabdhi is available to you. If you look into the 11th canto, 3rd chapter, you will see this. Same thing mentioned in the 11th canto. He says there that the Nityobalabdhi, here he is saying Nityobalabdhi Suryubhoham Atma. In the 11th canto, in the 3rd chapter, you can see how our Pipalayana Maharshi says this, out of the 9 sages, verse 38. Alma jajana namarishadi naithadesau nakshiyade savanaviddhivijarinam hi sarvatra shashvam anabhaya ubalabdhi matram. Prano yathendriya balena vikalpidam sad. Remember I mentioned from verse 35 to 40, our king asked, Nimi asked, who is Narayana? Remember those verses? Who is Narayana? Pipalayana Maharshi answered that question. If you want to understand God, these are the verses, proper description of God. If you show a form and say this is God, that's okay. We're not propping against our deities and say, here is Krishna, you can introduce like that. But if you really understand Krishna, like the way Rishis have understood, then these are verses are the explanation for that. See there? Alma jajananam arishyadi naithate asau nakshiyade savanavid vibhicharinam hi sarvatra shashvam shashvadana abai ubalabdhi matram. That is his greatest qualification about God or Krishna. What is his greatest qualification is that? Ubalabdhi matram. He's already there, available to us. Krishna is present in all of us, all the time. Without his presence, we are not there. To such an extent, he is close to us, and then we still think that, where is he? We are asking. Ubalabdhi matram. Prano yathendriya balena vikalpidam sat. So, that is the definition Pipalayana Maharshi has spoken there. So, because it is from him, we get the power to know things. Awareness. You see, when I see something, for example, few people sitting here, How do I know that you are present here? In my awareness, it has an effect of your presence, isn't it? I'm conscious. How do I get that? That is because of Antaryami inside. Otherwise, it is dead matter. You cannot get that perception or from of others' existence. Apart from my own existence is directly available due to His presence. I'm aware of that. Others' existence, I perceive through the senses, again through His presence. So without Him, even the awareness of others or my own awareness cannot happen. If my own awareness has to happen, it has to happen through Him. If others' existence has to happen, then again it has to happen through the mind and the senses, but again due to His presence. So either way, Upalabdhi Matram. He is the one who is actually present in all of us and making us aware of that, and that is what is called a chitta. Remember, Satya Chitta Anandam? The chitta is that aspect. Chitta is that aspect. So here, Samraga is saying here that by whose presence the mind, the senses, including the eyes, all of them functions and conduct their vyavaharam in this world, and one by whose departure everything changes. He mentions everything changes. So Nityo Balabdhi Surupa Samalma. Now, why is it spoken this lie in this way? Upalabdhi. It's a very important word. In the Vedam, Upanishads, Pandili Vipalaya Maharshi's words, and now Hastamalaka also uses this word, Upalabdhi. This is the beauty of the soul. What is that beauty? Beauty is like this, that if it is something, God is something, that you are going to get tomorrow, at a later date, at some point in time later, then it won't last. Anything you get, you will lose. That is the principle in the Vedanta. This Krishna started the Bhagavad Gita with that verse, for this reason only. The beauty of the Sat is nature, Atma is, that if you haven't got it today, you're not going to have it anymore in the future. If you are thinking that it's going to happen sometime in the future, after many years of devotional service, or many years of sadhana, or many years of Bhagavatam studying, if it is going to happen that I'll find out who God is, that is not true. That's not correct. Right now, He is there. That is why that word Upalabdhi is used. To point out to us that if it is something that's going to happen future, it's not going to stay. Just like He comes, He will go also. That's why form, all forms are like that. Any form, if it appears, whether it is Vishnu or Shiva or Brahma or anybody, doesn't matter. He may give you a darshanam, but He will disappear afterwards. You can't take, depend on the form. It has to be in the realization inside, and that has to come from the knowledge of the self, awareness inside. So that is why anything that's going to come will leave. Therefore, therefore He says here, anything that's going to come will go. And that is why Krishna also said this. In relationship with the soul, He spoke this in the Bhagavad Gita. Have you noticed that? Agamabhayino anityam tam tidikshasa bharada. Matrasparshastu kaunteya shidoshna sukadukhada. Agamabhayino anityam tam tidikshasa bharada. Agamam and coming and going is anityam, Krishna says there. In relationship with heat and cold. It's true in relationship with Atma. Actually, Krishna is pointing out this difference of Atma and the matter. Atma is not coming-going business. Doesn't work with Atma. Matrasparshastu kaundeya shidoshna sugadukhada shidam ushnam sugham dukham. They are all nature of the matter. Is it not? It is through the mind it works like that. But Atma is not like that. That's what he is saying there. That is why he is saying there. Otherwise, we all know without saying in the Bhagavad Gita, heat and cold will come and go. Bhagavad Gita doesn't have to tell us that, wouldn't it? We know by experience that for summer time you will feel the heat and winter time you will feel the cold. You may wonder why Krishna has spoken this in the Bhagavad Gita. The reason is not to tell us about heat and cold. The idea is to tell us that the nature of Atma is not like heat and cold, happiness and distress. It is different. Because agam anavayam, coming and going, is not the nature of Atma. He is present all the time in three states. Even after leaving the body, He is present there. And only He is present, nothing else is present. This is the most important principle. That is why that verse was spoken. Agamabhayinoh anityam tam tridikshasva bharatam. Of course, in the relationship, therefore, knowing this science, that knowing this principle, that Atma is always present, you should tolerate heat and cold. Why? Krishna is helping us to stay in the platform of the soul all the time instead of staying in the platform of the body. That's the reason. Otherwise, what happens? Oh, I have to tolerate all this heat, I have to tolerate all this cold. All the time we'll be worrying like that. Krishna is saying that if you stay in the platform of the soul, heat and cold should not disturb you, because we are not able to stay, we fall. Therefore, we've come to the body. Once you come to the body or to the mind, you have to suffer. That's the principle. The moment you come to the body or to the mind, and you leave your identity as Atma, then you have to suffer. That is the fundamental principle in this world. The moment you lose your spiritual identity and accept a material identity, the form of body or the mind, then all the dualities of this world will give you trouble, and you have to live with that. There is no easy way out. The only thing is to stay in the platform of the soul. This is why self-realization is so important, for this reason. So, that is what he's saying here. That so, one thing that does not have coming and going business. Atma doesn't have that business. Coming and going does not work with him. So, and that is what we have to find out. Who is that who doesn't come and go? That's what we are after, isn't it? And Krishna is saying here, that is the only thing that you won't lose it. Who doesn't come and go? If it is coming and going, you will lose it. For example, he says, take your body. Comes, you lose it. It's not going to stay with you. And similarly, mind. Mind also will go. It's not going to stay like this, isn't it? It's all thought waves only. Comes and goes. We keep saying when you get older, I can't remember his name. I can't remember whether I paid the bill. I can't remember so many things. Memory goes one after the other. Because it has come. Intelligence also same thing. As you have developed the intelligence from childhood to adult, that intelligence also you start realizing that when you get older, that's also losing. Everything you are losing one after the other, isn't it? Including ahankaram. False ego also, one day disappears. When you get a lot of kick from the world, that also goes away. So, but there is one thing inside which doesn't rises, never sets, and never comes and goes, and that is Atma. And that is what Asnavalaka is saying there. Nityobalabdhi sarupoham Atma. Actually, when you study and read all these books, you start realizing how serious spiritual life is. Spiritual life is not something that you can take it so easily. I'll just hear some stories, I'll did some service and everything. That's enough now. I've done my bit. Can't say that, because it's so much avidya inside us. And to remove, get rid of that from inside and come to the platform of the soul, it does take a long time. So Krishna is saying here that in that truth, who is present inside, Atma, Nityovalabdhi Sarvaha Atma, in that truth, this body is only a kalpana there. You understand that? Body is a kalpana in that soul. I know it is very difficult for most of the people to accept this principle. But Upanishads, Ekadasha Skandam, Bhagavad Gita would not accept, no matter. That is why the beauty of the Rishis' knowledge. They have gone to such deeper levels and pulled out this message and told us. And we, because of our avidya inside, we are finding it hard to digest it. Is this the truth? We keep asking. When that is why, if you remember, when our Bhikshu, remember Bhikshu Gita? That Bhikshu, what he did was, he had a, Krishna is saying this, you have to remember that, Krishna is saying this. Bhikshu says, Deham, if you look into his 23rd chapter, verse 23, 50th, verse 50. He's saying here, Deham, Bhikshu is singing this song, Bhikshu Gita, and he is openly declaring to the world my realization, he's saying this. Why I have come in this direction. Deham mano matram imam grihitva mama aham ityandhadiyo manushyaham eshoham anyoyam idi brahmena durandavare tamasi brahmandi. That is his explanation for that. What have you done? He says, deham mano matram imam grihitva. He was, you know, Bhikshu, how he was treated by the people. They have done, you can't imagine the kind of things they have done to him. Even a few verses earlier. They abused him and insulted him and rudely spoke to him and tried to tease him. An old Brahmana who had lived a long life and is almost quite old person. But Prarabdham has not left. And Prarabdham has come like this. In through these people. That Prarabdham he had to go through. They have come and they started abusing him. Pulled away his danda first. Water pot to taken away. And everything, whatever blanket he had, one torn cloth, that was taken away. Everything took away. Different people came and took it away. And then he had some food somebody has given. He was going to eat. And because he's a bhikshu, normally when they get in bhiksha food, they'll first wash the food in the water. And then they'll take it. The reason being, they don't want to taste the food. To keep that bodily, you may thinking, oh, we are, as soon as you look... we are thinking when the food prasadam comes, if there's a little shortage of salt or sugar, then we complain. Bhikshus, all bhikshus, Paramahamsa bhikshus, they will wash the food. Why? They don't want to enjoy senses under any circumstances, so therefore they wash the food in the water. So when he tried to wash the food in the water and bring it out, people have deliberately passed urine into the food and put some sand into the food so that he cannot eat that food. And they've done everything they can. You have to look into the verses before. And finally, they started talking rude to him, says, oh, he's found out a new method of making a living, now has he? And they were talking and hurt him so much inside. And then look at Bhikshu's realization. Bhikshu is saying, deham manomatram imam grihitva. What is this body, he is saying? This gross body is nothing but the gross form of the subtle mind. Mind is the subtle form, body is the gross form. Mind is sushmam, body is sthulam. Or in other words, the gross body, its subtle form is the mind. And you know very well, the body has come from the mind, as far as Shastram is concerned. Body has come from the mind. So, sushmam is the mind and sthulam or the gross side is this gross body. And because it has come from the mind and the mind has no reality existing, their argument is body also has no reality. Which is true because you can see this body appears and then disappears. For a short period of time, it exists. But in relationship with Atma, Atma existing all the time. We have changed the body so many times. And therefore, the point is, Vedantam says, body has no meaning and it has no existence. It is something like that has appeared and disappeared. So many different bodies. We ourselves don't know how many bodies has appeared in us and disappeared in us. Is it not? We consider this body as so important and so much importance. So he is saying here, deham manomatram imam grihitva. Manomatram it is. It has come from the mind and mind has no meaning. Why? Krishna says that, is it not? If you look into the 28th chapter, what did he say? He is saying there in the 28th chapter, which we will be discussing at the Christmas holidays. What did Krishna say about mind? Uddhava, never trust that mind. It has no meaning, he said. Krishna is saying there, in the 28th chapter, you will see that he has to say this to, but Krishna finished up in one verse. He says, kim badram, kim abadram va, dvaidasya vastuna kiyal, vajodidam tad amrdam, manasodhyatame vaja. Vajodidam tad anurdam. Anurdam means total lie it is. thing called mind. You have to remember Krishna is speaking from that state. You have to always remember that. Krishna is speaking from that realized state. Vajodidam tan amrdam manasodhyadam evacha. That it's all lie. The world is false. The body is false. Mind is false. Everything is false. As far as Krishna is concerned. Only Sat, Alpa Vastu inside is the only reality, only truth. So he's establishing there this about the mind. Manasadhyatam evaja. And all what you are manufacturing with your mind, that is also false. Vajodidam tat anurdam. Whatever you are speaking and all the lies what comes out from you, manasodhyatam evaja. Vajodidam tat anurdam. And that's the same message Bhikshu is also picked up here. And he's saying to us, Deham manomatramimam grihitva mamahamit andhadiyo manushyaha. I know it is very difficult, this principle of the Shastram, for many people to accept it. Oh, there's something wrong with the Shastram, they will say. Or many people, when you are very absorbed in the body, or too much identifying with the body, then when you say this to them initially, they think it is not making any sense to me. They'll say like that. You can go and tell all these big scientists, they'll tell you the same thing. It's not making any sense. But what can you do? You have to wait till it makes sense to you. What more can you do? Then if it was not making any sense, then all these great souls, right up to Prabhupada, from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or from Shankaracharya or Ramanuja, or all of them, would not have spent all their lifetime to get this message across. They are not daft. They have the brain inside. They can see, they know that. That therefore they have openly told us that Acharya Swamiji puts it like this, too much aparavidya will make you like that, dull, completely dull. Then you won't get in inside, you won't understand it, what Krishna is saying. And Krishna's, this was enough for Uddhava. For Uddhava that's enough, because Uddhava is Krishna's devotee and he gets a message very easily too. Says. So what I'm saying is that deham manomatram imam grihitva. And the problem is, once you have accepted body as a reality, truth, Eshoham anyoham. That's where it begins. Eshoham anyoyam idi brahmena. You start thinking, I am separate, he is separate. He is different, I am different. He is his business, I am my business. This breakup has happened. Eshoyam, Eshoham anyoyam idi brahmena. And what is the result? Durandabhare tamasi brahmandi. Durandabharam. It is such a darkness, he says. Tamogunam tamas. Such a darkness, durandabharam. It has no bottomless. So deeply you fall into darkness. Durandabhare tamasi brahmandi. That illusion is so strong. So you can imagine why Bhikshu said that. Bhikshu said this because of this problem that he is saying here, that that body is nothing but something that has come for temporarily, and which is present there, you appears as though, because you are seeing with the eye, so you think that it is real. The body is real. But actually, body is not real. Only because of the presence of Atma inside, you feel this presence of this body at the moment. But and this presence as Jiva, all these things, me, yourself, all of them, is nothing but in that pure consciousness. In that pure consciousness, these are nothing but the bubbles or waves that is happening there. It comes up, it stays for some time and then disappears. Like in the ocean. How you see the big waves comes up, or the foam or the bubbles that comes up, stays for a few seconds and then disappears. Do you call that as real? That's what he is asking. Realized personalities will never accept this body as real. It's very, very difficult. But earlier in the spiritual life, we have to say, we are the body till you come out of the body. And that does take time. When you have a lot of deep relationship with the body, it's very difficult when you first tell them that you are not the body. It's very hard for them to digest it. So therefore we say that you have to take to this process first, chant the holy name, and then study Bhagavad Gita, and little by little get this point into their mind. And when they become sufficiently aware of the presence of the soul, at that time, then you have to open up the truth and say to them, body is not even real. want to talk about other things. Mind is not real. Nothing is real in this. The only thing that's real is Nityobalabdhi Svarupoham Atma. Atma is the only thing that's real there. So this in this awareness, what is called Brahmam or pure consciousness, Avabhodam, billions and billions of living entities are appearing and disappearing in different bodies, coming and going there. But in spite of all that, that pure consciousness behind, where it's all happening, it's unaffected by all those things. That it is unaffected by that. And Samarga is saying, I am that consciousness. I'm not identifying with the body anymore. I'm that pure consciousness. Nijabodha Rupam. And if you stay in that pure consciousness, then you don't have birth or death. Birth and death is finished. Once you have become a part of that pure consciousness and no destruction. And if once you have realized that, you've already escaped from death. Then you can see here that he is saying also that you've already come out of that cycle of birth and death. Cycle of birth and death. Once you have come to that state of self-realization. So, important message is that it is not something that's going to happen tomorrow or through meditation or in the future or through any sadhana that it is going to happen. But right now, at this moment in time, this realization must happen to us. That awareness inside us, or is present inside, that's us. That's nothing apart from that. So, but because our problem now is because we don't experience that. And therefore, we have fallen into what he calls it as Brahmam. See that word he has used? Bhikshu has used the word Brahmam. Brahmam means this illusion. We thinking that, oh, I am something different. I am this body. I have all other problems of this world. And I am finished with that. And once that Brahmam, what that avidya inside creates this Brahmam. Avidya inside creates this Brahmam. And once that Brahmam has gone, then the truth inside will manifest in a natural way. And here Hastalaga is saying there that Satyam which is present inside of everyone, Nitya Ubalabdhi, that Swarupam is me. Nityobalabdhi Swarupoham Atma. That's me, he said. And why did he use the word Akasham? See that word he used there? Nirasthagi Lobadi Akashakalpam. Why did he use that word Akasham? Because in order to create that imagination in us of the nature of the soul. To give us an imagination, the nature of the soul, what it is like. Instead of pointing out that he is present, when we say he is present in the body here, it is only for the sake of only for the sake of sadhana, only for the sake of developing spiritually. After, when you a stage comes, that then you realize that you are not anymore limited to one body, then this idea, and this we drop. We drop that. Then you are part of that. Part of the... And that is why, to compare that, he mentioned that Agashakalpa, less like the sky. Present everywhere. Pure consciousness, in other words. Bodham. Awareness. Nyapti. Prajna. All words refers to the same thing. Nyapti. Prajna. This Bodham. And many other words you will see like that. Kodastham. All this is... Kodastham is when he comes into this cage, into the body, is called Kodastham. So, Nimittam mana chakshuradi pravurtau nirastagilobhadi akashakalpam revirloka cheshta nimittam yathaya sanityobalabdhi swarupoham alma swarupoham alma. So, there, that important verse to show to us that Hasamaraga is speaking from that state. He's speaking from that state. Ajahn Swamiji had no problem after that. Because he got what he wanted, the answer from him. So he didn't want to anymore. All he did was to his parents, he said, I don't think this child will be happy with you, Lord. Parents are Shuddha Jnani. parents are thinking he is sick. What should we? They thought that Acharya Swamiji will give some medicine and get him cured or something like that. But the disease is something serious than that. That so he told the parents, rather than treating him, I may as well treat you, because you are the ones who need the treatment, the parents, not the child. Child is already in that state. What can you do? So because they understand each other better. So in the various things in this world, the only thing you can compare something is with the sky, because to show the unlimited nature of the Atma, unlimited nature of the soul, Anandam, is addressed as Anandam, isn't it? Anandam means unlimited. So that is the reason infinite space, Akasham, is used in that response. Akasham does not mean just the sky, Akasham means infinite space. That's how it is used, Akasham. So, Sarvi, Akasham, because space is everywhere, it's inside us also, there is space inside, isn't it? Hridaya kuhara madhye kevalam brahma matram. That is present inside us, and Atma is present inside that space. Chit, chidabhasa jiva, and chit prakasham, and chit vastu, and that Atma who is present inside, that is called chit, that chit sky, in other words. So, and we are staying in that space. We are staying in that space. And that sky, Akasham inside, is extremely subtle. Extremely subtle. You know why that is. The reason is, look at the way creation is. The most subtle form is the sky. And from sky came the air. Air, isn't it? From air came the fire. Fire came the water. Water came the earth. So the most gross form, when it comes, it becomes the earth. It becomes the earth. And the more subtle it becomes the sky. Is it not? You know, one from in the process of creation, you will see how it happens. From the sky comes the air. Air comes the fire. Fire comes the water. Water comes the earth. Earth. So earth is the most gross form, and sky is the most subtle form. Space is the most subtle form. Now, Shastram, normally if you mix water and fire, they won't join. Isn't it? Vedam says water has come from the fire. That's the difference. And if you say this to the scientists, they will say, "Oh, this is all mythology." Is it Hindu mythology, they'll say, and reject it. It's nothing to do with Hinduism, nothing to do with the mythology. It is the Shastram of the Rishis. Whether you want it or not, that's up to you to take it. Rishis are not interested in propagating the so-called religion. Their instruction is all based on knowledge. Either you have the brain or you have that purity inside you to understand this, how this creation has happened. When somebody openly tells you water is coming from the fire, we will think there's something wrong with you to say that, is it not? But Rishis are saying to us, water comes from fire. Don't ask for proof. They are telling us water comes from fire. And from water comes the earth. That is how they have seen things. So, and how do they experiment, how their explanation to that is, that earth, if you leave it, a piece of earth somewhere, it will lie there. It will lie there. Because it is so gross, it does not have this capacity of pervasiveness. Pervasiveness. It cannot, pervasiveness is not there. When you look at water, which is a little bit more subtle than the earth, if you leave water somewhere, it will spread straight away. Isn't it? It's called pervasiveness, isn't it? Pervasiveness nature. Pervasive nature. So, pervasive nature. So, why water goes like that in different directions? Because it's a little bit more subtle than the earth. Subtle than the earth. And if you go further, little bit more than that, fire has got the capacity not only to spread by the way, it can only go up also. It goes up as well. Fire has the capacity to go up. So the subtle and subtle becomes, the elements, they become more and more pervasive. Fire, more pervasive than the water. Water, more pervasive than the and the earth. And then you go back to air and look at it, It's more pervasive than the fire. It can go in all directions, everywhere. Isn't it? And more pervasive than the air is the space. It's the space. It's more pervasive than the air. So the five material elements, they have a relationship. It's not the way we think about it. It's the Rishi's conclusions they are. So, and Vayu, it grows everywhere, but there is a space beyond where the air is not present, isn't it? And vacuum or space, what they call it. And that is the space, what we say, that's the sky, where what they call atmosphere is finished there. And then it goes beyond that, air is not present either. So, because the sky is present everywhere, out of all these five elements, Sarvavyapi is present everywhere. But therefore, he is compared with Atma. That is the reason why he is compared with Atma. Instead of fire, air or water or anything. The reason why sky is compared with Atma is because of its pervasive presence everywhere. So, but in reality, this Atma is beyond time and space. That's also another important point. You shouldn't get stuck with the sky. Sky is only a comparison. Because time and space, if you bring, it doesn't work with Atma. I mentioned this many times before. How foolish it is to limit Atma to time and space. That is the nature of Atma. Time and space is because of the mind. Because you got the mind, you need time and space. And what we are trying to do, the science also is trying to do, is to bring Atma into time and space. Time and space. And that is why it fails all the time. That if time and space, time has actually only there because of the mind. If the mind was not there, time won't be there. Why do we need time? We got now time. Everybody has time. Mobile phones also got time. Everywhere there is time now, isn't it? And we give so much importance to this time. Rishis gave no importance to the time. They say, you're all stupid. You think they could not have invented a watch if they wanted? They didn't do it. Why? From their point of view, time has no meaning. It's like history. History has no meaning. History is all lie as far as they are concerned. You have to always remember that when Krishna is saying, Rishis are saying, they are speaking from the spiritual position, not like us, based on the body, everything. They don't talk like that. We have to rise up to their level. You can't bring them to our level. That's what we are trying to do with them. We are trying to make Krishna and others to come to our level. They won't come. Rishis won't come to our level. We have to rise to their level. That means what Rishis told us about time, we have to accept it. We don't tell the Rishis, oh, you couldn't even find out a watch, you don't know how to find out the time, what time it is. People think like that. They think these old men sitting in the forest, they couldn't have proper time, they were looking at the sky and calculating the time. People say about them. Whereas we have got the most latest Rolex costing £4,000. Show you the time correctly, isn't it? As far as the Rishis are concerned, your time is all bogus. It has no meaning. This time comes in when, that is, it is then that we invented this past, present and future, all based on the body. Is it not? It's based on the body, past, present and future. Otherwise, what meaning has it got? Time. Because I say that when I was born, 1947 or 45, whatever it is, that I was born, now I'm, how many, 68 years old, I'm 2014, and if I get another 10 years, I'll say, oh, I'll live up to 25 or something like that. All this has no meaning as far as Atma is concerned. That is why when we compare with the space, you have to remember this, space and the time has no relationship with Atma. Even it is beyond time and space. But the best example you can give among the what is known to us is the space, present everywhere in that sense. But otherwise, time and space is also is a limitation on Atma. Atma is not limited by time and space. Another important point to remember. So, here you can see, so, in fact, when does time and space comes? When the mind comes. Is it not? In the deep sleep state, you don't have time and space. This science is making big claims as though they have found out something fantastic. They don't. This is, you will see this this is in that Mandukya Upanishad. Mandukya Upanishad, if you read, Mandukya Karika is there. Gaudapadacharya's Karika. He's saying there that if you want to study human body, human life, you have to study him in all the three states. Which one? Vacant state, dream state, and the deep sleep. You should study us in all the three states. But modern science is only taking everything what is in the vacant state. They haven't got a clue what's going on in the deep sleep or the dream state. So therefore, Shankaracharya's commentary on that, he is saying there that anything devoid of these three states, if you study a society or human any body, it does not, it is completely avidya, he says. He rejects the whole thing. He rejects the whole thing. But unfortunately, this science has taken over everywhere. And they've got some machines they have invented, and with these machines the whole world is struggling with this. With the world, they put everybody into trouble. Keeps us all, a lot of people on the job, no doubt. But the ajnanam or the avidya in that is much more deeper than what we think about it. Isn't it? So you can see, when you wake up in the morning, in the deep sleep state there is no time, no space. Only when you wake up in the morning, when the mind has woken up, it is at that time you come to know about the space and time. In the deep sleep there is no space, there is no time. Nobody knows about time in the deep sleep, isn't it? So how long you have been sleeping, you are not aware in the deep sleep state. So whereas as soon as you wake up, you come to know that I have been sleeping for 6 hours or 8 hours. Why is that? So, because if you know the time in the deep sleep, that means you're not sleeping. Isn't it? If you know the time in the deep sleep state, that means you're not sleeping. So, only when you wake up, you get to know that so many hours you have slept. That means, well, how did it happen? Because the mind is woken up. Mind is woken up. And then you start thinking, oh, time has gone so fast. I didn't have enough good sleep. You say like that, isn't it? So, only when you have the mind, you can be conscious of the time. You can be conscious of the time. And or conscious of the space also, in the same way. See, for example, if you have a lot of properties in the world, estates as they call it, real estates in the world, in the deep sleep state, you don't know how much property you have, do you? Only, say you've got so many apartments in Mayfair and all other places, wherever the best properties, Belgravia, whatever it is, costing millions and millions of billions of pounds. When you go into deep sleep state, you're not conscious of that, are you? When you wake up in the morning, when the mind has come back, mind is telling you, oh, you got all these properties everywhere. It's kept like that. Otherwise, what's your awareness about that, isn't it? So here, Krishna is saying here also, that that person who says, like our Hastamalika says here, Nityobalabdhi Suryuboham Alma. In other words, that thing which is beyond the mind and space, that's me. See there? His definition of Alma. Nityobalabdhi Suryuboham Alma means he has transcended the mind, means he has transcended time and space. He has transcended time and space. You can't bring him under time and space anymore. He has gone from that. That means he has transcended. That's what they say, the word. Transcended the mind. Transcended the time and space. If you have transcended the mind, you have transcended time and space. You have transcended time and space. Then you can't bring that person back into your world. He is in another world. He is living. And this will happen through bhakti or through jnanam, either way. In the Bhagavatam, you will see this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's many pastimes, if you look, is all in that category. Outside this world, you couldn't bring him down to your world. And all the associates were wondering about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is it not? When he was in the ocean, when he fell in the Bengal Ocean, and there the fishermen put the net and brought him back. And then they took him to Jagannath Puri, and he was inside the house. And they didn't even know, his limbs were not all together. All the limbs were stretched out to such a level that it has lost its consciousness or the space. Now we occupy a certain space in this body. But when you are in that state, what they call it as, you've gone outside this world. In this Lokabahya, they call it Lokabahya. You have gone outside this world, then you are not restricted by the rules of this world anymore. Time and space doesn't exist for them anymore. This is in so many cases. Through yoga system, people have reached this. Great, great yogis also, jnanis also, they get there. So, but in the eyes of the world, eyes of this world, akasha kalpaha, it says like the space. We can compare with the space, and who is present everywhere. In other words, there is no space where he is not present, and he is present all over. And all five material elements, earth, water, air, ether, and fire, all of them you have transcended. You have transcended even the five gross material elements. You have transcended them. You have transcended the mind, intelligence, ego, all those things. And he has come to his state as Atma. Nityobalabdhis surupoham Atma. That's why you will see every verse in that, 13 verses, finishes with that. Nityobalabdhis surupoham Atma. And Atma, it is body is present in the Atma. Our gross body is present in the Atma. Not that Atma is present in the body. That's how now, for the moment, at the moment, isn't it? We say, I have got a soul, we say. When you are saying that, what it means is you have the body. It is from that level you are saying that, I have got a soul. We ask the question, isn't it, that about animals, we say. We argue very strongly about animals with people. Have the animals got soul? Also, other religions say that animals have no soul. And we say animals have got soul. This is all our argument. And so it's sometimes very interesting to listen to these arguments, because you can see that we have concocted something, our own understanding, that animals have got soul. But what actually is the soul is the only one what is real, present in this creation. Bodies are forms that's appearing and disappearing from there. So similarly, our own body is something that is present, it is existing like this. Just like the car is going on the street, it's going everywhere. But in reality, what is present is only Atma, not the body. Body will go like this, here, there, everywhere, and then one day it will go. That's it. So that, and based on this body, you are experiencing this world, is it not? All your experience of this world is based on the body. And therefore, all our experiences are in the upside down, everything. Because of this, you see, what's happening is, Atma is a real thing, and real substance, what's present. In that, this body is existing. In this body is existing. And not the other way, that Atma is present inside the body is existing, and inside that, Atma is present. It's not like that. Atma is existing in that, this form is manifesting and unmanifested. Manifested and unmanifested. Comes in, goes away. Comes in, goes away. Atma is always present. So, and all experiences in this world is based on this body. Is it not? Through the senses and the mind and all the experiences. So we are thinking the world is there. In that world, the body is there. And in that body, the soul is there. This is how we look at it, isn't it? But in reality, actually Atma is there, and in that Atma, ego comes first, Mahatattvam. Mahatattvam comes, Ahantattvam comes, and that Ahankaram, or false ego, that brings all the experiences to us of this world, through the mind and the senses. First thing is Ahantattvam. Ahankaram is the first one that wakes up. In the morning, when you wake up from the deep sleep, first thing that wakes up is the ahankaram, is it not? I, my existence, awareness of me, I am. I am comes first, immediately followed by the mind, then followed by the world. Is it not? Mind comes later, And then the, of course, intelligence is there, then the senses are there, and then the world is there. It all happens very fast. So, our understanding is that, that is the opposite way. But here, from Atma comes Ahangaram. From Ahangaram comes all mind and experience of the world, everything. And then after that, continuously that experience of the world is felt through the mind and through the Ahangaram. Who is experiencing? Come to Atma. But Atma is not bound by anything. He is independent. But this experience that's happening inside us is only due to the birth of presence of Atma inside. All these things were born. Which one? Ahangaram was born, mind was born, intelligence was born, ego was, senses were born, body was born, and experiences are born. Come from that. So everything is reversed in our understanding. Have you noticed that? We are so much in identification with the body. We are thinking, the world is there, I am one tiny living jiva here in this body. So for me, the world is reality, and then the next reality is my body. And more subtle than that, my reality is so-called Atma. So Atma is the last one in our jigsaw. Atma is the last one. But actually, Atma is the real, the world is the last one. See that in Vedantam, Upanishads are the support behind it. Upanishads are saying that world is not the real one. Real one is Atma. From there came the world later. Whereas for us now, world is real. Is it not? And then comes me, the next real one. And after that, the next real one is the mind or intelligence. And then finally, the last real thing is the Atma. And it is totally the opposite way it works. So, therefore, so here, all our experiences of the world is because of the presence of the senses. Presence of the senses. And if you don't have the senses, you won't know this world existing. How will you know about the existence of the world? So, if you don't have the eyes, ears, and nose, and sense of touch and taste, this world doesn't exist. How do we know that all these, so many things are existing? So people who have got five senses, like us, we experience the world in one way, in a particular way, isn't it? And there are other living entities who have got three senses. They experience the world in a different way. They experience the world in a different way. For example, plants and the trees and all that, they also have got life in them, but they are not like us, isn't it? They are not experiencing the world like us. They don't experience the world like the way we experience the world. Because we have got five senses, we experience the world in a different way. You can take, for example, this snake. Snake has got one sense which does two jobs. Chakshusa Shravanam. It can see and it can hear with the same sense. One sense only it has got. That's why it's called Chakshusharavanam. Chakshusharavanam is another name for the snake. So you will notice these people who, play the music. What's it called?
Snake charmer.
So when they play that charming the snake, with the music, it keeps the snake busy. It's attractive because at that time its senses are completely controlled by the music. And therefore he can't see. He does like this, keep both sides. It changes his head. So this is what to prove to that this one sense, it can only do one function at a time, either hear or see. So in either way, therefore it's called Chatushranam. Chatushranam is called. So similarly, depending on the number of senses you have, like for example, you can see this amoeba and all that. What senses have they got? They've got very limited sensual power, isn't it? So he is saying here that depending on number of senses you have, your experience of the world will change. Is it not? Suppose I have five senses, I will experience the world in one way. But plants and the trees, they have very limited sensual experiences. Therefore, they don't complain about the traffic jam. They don't complain about all the flights that's going on. So they don't have any senses to experience that problem. What we are experiencing. So purely because of the senses, we are experiencing all the problems also. Our happiness and distress is based on completely on the senses. Completely on the senses. So according to the number of senses, the world changes. That's the most important thing. The world is not we thinking we are seeing the world in one way. Somebody else is seeing the world in something different way. Different way. So the world is not a reality. Reality is Atma. And world will change according to the type of senses, number of senses you have got. So therefore world is not reality. You can't say world, no, which world is real now out of this? Suppose you had six senses, one more sense apart from the five. Then your world will be again different. So which world is real? The world with the six senses, world with the five senses, or world with the three senses, or world with one sense. Which one is real? Which will you say it is a real one? So that's why this modern science and all its arguments and all is all very flimsy. It has no standing. Just because they have found out some machines and capable of manage to go to some fly in the sky or going deep into the ocean, you can't say that they have understood all the deeper side of the creation. Now what the Hadron Collider is saying there is that we have spent only 20 billion. Now we need some more money for the experiment. And no government is willing to support them. Apparently Americans tried that. And they said because it costs so much money, they said we leave it to the Europeans. Let the Europeans do it. It's there in that program, they are telling all these things. And now they are saying we need more money. In the middle, somewhere they had to stop the experiment because they couldn't pay the electricity bill. They stopped it because they are pumping money, Switzerland, Austria, Germany, France, so many countries, they are involved in all these things. So this is our science, what is to go to offer. And if you spend all your best life in this world, time in this world, studying all these things, those things, you can imagine what will happen at the end. So, Nityobalabdhi Swarubaham Atma. Nityobalabdhi Swarubaham Atma. So, there is no time when he doesn't exist. Atma. There is always present there. And if he is not there, you can't experience anything without his presence. And he is always present there. And that's me, says Asavaraya. That's me. So, and that is my identity. That is my identity. That is what he had to say in that verse. That's why it's been. Now look at the next verse, what he says.
Yamagnishnavan nityabhoda swarupam manachakshuradinyabhoda almagani pravartandam ashritya nishkambamekam sanityobalabdhi swarupoham alpa. Yamagnishnavan nityabhoda swarupam manachakshuradinyabhoda almagani pravartandam ashritya nishkambamekam sanityobalabdhi swarupoham alpa. So, the relationship is saying fire and the heat. Fire and the heat. Yamagni Ushnavan Nitya Bhoda Sarupam. That Atma and awareness is like that. If there is fire, there will be heat. Is it not? You can't separate them. It is a part of fire, heat. Heat and light is part of the fire. So just like the moment you say fire, it's understood there is heat. Similarly, the moment you say Atma, awareness has to be there. Consciousness or awareness has to be there. So bodham or awareness, chitta, is a part of the, is a inherent part of the Atma. Atma cannot exist without awareness. You must know these three things, Satya, Chitta, Anandam. How deep rooted that definition is. When you say that within you, when you feel that there is no such thing called death, there is no such thing called death. Death is for the body, is it not? In the not realized state, we worry about the death. But sometimes when you get an experience of a glimpse of your eternity, that is called that Sat potency. Sat is that. That when you are not in the identification with the body, sometimes everybody gets a glimpse of that. There is no such thing called death. Because it's very difficult to accept death.
And it is because of that sat potency in us that day after day we are willing to carry on in this world. Suppose I knew for definite that I am finished with death, then I don't think I will follow the morals of this world, would you? Why do I have moral fear about certain things in this world? It's because that I know that the body will die, I'm aware of that, but it's difficult to accept that with that death of the body everything is finished. I know very well that even Shastram doesn't have to tell me that you still feel that it can't be the end of it. There has to be something more to it than that. So long as that thought is inside, at least sometime in life, sometimes some people get it for at least a glimpse of it. For a short period of time maybe. Most of the time we are busy with the body and the mind. But sometimes you realize it that it's not everything, this body and the mind. It has to go one day and then there is something after that, isn't it? So life after death, in other words, it's existing. And when Shastram is also telling us, so this realization when you have, that's coming, that is the reason why we are not frightened about death. Even in spite of the fact that we have been told, death is there, all the misery is there with the death. Why are we not frightened? We say, we'll see when it comes. That's our attitude now, isn't it? When it comes, we'll see. We are not preparing for death. None of us, are we? When it comes, we'll see. Why is that? Because of this sat aspect of the soul is not allowing us to accept it. The thing called, it's not a reality inside. Antaryami's experience, there is no death. That's why Antaryami is not allowing that thing called death to get in and to worry us about it. We do worry. When do we worry? When we get into the body. When we identify with the body, we worry a lot about the death. So, sat aspect. Chit aspect is this awareness. Awareness means of my existence, I exist. And that awareness is always telling me that this is not the end of the business story. And I'm also aware of existence of so many others, living entities in this world. How? Because it is coming from that chit potency, chit shakti. That is what is called chit. That's what it is called, chit. So, and we are talking about this awareness again and again. We keep on repeating this, isn't it? So, because this experience is only in the awareness. That also important thing. Experience is only in the awareness. Perception is in the mind. What is the difference between perception and awareness? Awareness is something that you are experiencing. You are experiencing. That means in your own consciousness you know about it. But happiness and distress or different names and forms, what you see, is all perception. It's all perception. Perception means it will come in the mind and it will go from the mind. Therefore, knowledge of the self should not remain in the mind. It should go into awareness. It should get into awareness. So, and only living force, Atma alone, has this capacity to experience something. To experience something. In the, you know that, as I mentioned before also, you may have remembered this. In the Bhagavatam, there is a very unusual name given to Krishna. Have you noticed? Unusual name. And it's been given in four or five different places. Kevalanu Bhavananda Swarupam. That's his name. Krishna's name. Kevalanu Bhavananda Swarupam. Kevalam Anubhava Ananda Swarupam. Who says this? Mother Devaki Devi is saying to Krishna. Kevalanu Bhavananda Swarupam. There is another three or four places, the same way he is addressed. Krishna is addressed in the same way. Kevalanu Bhavananda Swarupam. Why? This is the most precise definition of Krishna, rather than any other definition that we can give to Krishna. Because he is present in the form of experience, anubhava, of that anandam, bliss that's coming from the swarupam. And that's him. Kevalanu Bhavananda Swarupam. In three, four places it's there. I can't remember everywhere now. But one thing I know, Devaki Devi has spoken that. I think Brahma has spoken that. And another places, in one of the devotees, Uddhava has spoken, I think, all referring to Krishna in that way. Kevalanu Bhavananda Swarupam. So, kevala anubhava means that only you can experience Krishna, not seeing form. Form will come and go, how will you know? But who is present all the time? Experience, isn't it? Kevala anubhava. So, and that experience is called samadhi. Experiencing Krishna like that is called samadhi. So, samadhi state, that means when you have come out of these three states, which one? Vacant state, dream state, and the deep sleep. When you have come out of those three, then that is the state is Krishna Swarupam. In the Rishabhadev's story, when Shri Brahma she says to to Rishabhadev Parishet, what did he say to him? He said to him that the same thing what our Hasavalaya is saying there. It's on the fifth canto. If you look there in the beginning, very little differences you will see in the words. But in principle, what he has to say was that he says to him when he spoke about that, then it's in the sixth chapter, the last two words. Last two words says, Rajan Padar Gururalam Bhavatam Yadunam Devam Priyakulabadi Kojakingarova Astu Eva Manga Bhagavan Vajadam Mukundo Muktim Dadadi Karhijalsmana Bhakti Yogam. When he's talking about bhakti, who is given bhakti? When do you get that bhakti? So, just like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, Brahma Buddha Prasannalma Nashojade Nakamshadi Sama Sarveshu Buddheshu Mad Bhaktim Lebhade Param. So, that bhakti, what Krishna is talking about is after this realization of Aham Brahmasmi. That is the bhakti. That is proper bhakti. But unfortunately, what happened? Prabhupada has also said this exactly the same thing. If you look into one of the Prabhupada's DVDs, which they have made in one lecture in Australia, I think he was saying this, that bhakti begins after Aham Brahmasmi state. Otherwise, it's not even called bhakti. Prabhupada said this. And that is the proper understanding is like that in the Bhagavatam also. So, but generally what happens is, we have developed a style of bhakti, our own style of bhakti, isn't it, in this world. And that bhakti involves burning the Ravana and 10,000 times getting the results from all this is a part of our style of bhakti. So, because Krishna doesn't want us to mix our bhakti with bhakti what Krishna has spoken, Krishna has been specific about this in the Bhagavad Gita that Aham Brahmasmi state you realize first. That means you have to completely realize yourself. After that there is a bhakti and that is the bhakti Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The same problem came here also. Parikshit asked the question that liberation is a difficult thing, not easily given. But Shukam Brahmashi told him, Muktim Dadadi Karhichal Smana Bhakti Yogam. Mukti Krishna gives freely. One who has given bhakti to so many demons also. Na bhakti yogam. Bhakti is given exclusivities. So to make that bhakti is the next verse. In the same way, you can see that. Nityanabhudam Nijalaba Nivrta Trishna Shreyasidadrajanaya Chirasupta Buddhehe Logasaya Karnaya Bhayam Alpmalogam Agyanamo Bhagavade Krishabhaya Tasmai. Krishabhadev state of bhakti. Krishabhadev's life is an example of that bhakti. How is that? Nityana Bhuta Nijalava Nivrta Trishna. What Hastamalaka is saying here? Nityobalabdi Surubaham Alma. That's the same thing spoken in a little different way, different words in the Rishabhadev's case. They are exactly in the same level spoken. Nityobalabdi Surubaham Alma says Hastamalaka. And Nityana Buddha Nijalaba Nivarta Trishna Shreyasida Drijanaya Jara Supta Buddhe Logasaya Karinaya Bhayam Atma Logam Akhyanu Bhagavade Vishavaya Tasmai. to explain to us that the state of realization of Rishabhadev, what state he was in, that is bhakti, as far as Bhagavadam is concerned. That is bhakti. And when you look at Rishabhadev in the Bhagavadam, what did he do? He put a stone into the mouth and no clothes on. No clothes on. And he is wandering around in this world. And children were throwing stones at him, thinking that he's a mad person. And everyone was trying to, and he was the king at that time. When he left his, but when this realization has come, after all, he is Krishna's another incarnation, isn't it? So then he's walking around in this state, completely unaffected by the world. The world cannot do anything to him anymore because he's gone outside the world. That body is still moving around in this world, waiting for its end to come, prarabdham or whatever we call it. It is prarabdham. That is why that body is staying there. Even when Krishna comes, the rule doesn't change. Prarabdham will remain there. It will hold. This kind of incarnations we are talking about. But that prarabdham, when we are talking about it, it's not spoken in the same way like our prarabdham. Our prarabdham is our karma, vasana, what has created like that. And their prarabdham is not coming from the karma in the same side. They don't have vasanas. Vasanas have gone away from inside. But due to some unknown reasons, that body is meant to stay some more time, so therefore the body is there. That's all. So there it is spoken about that he has to wait till that body leaves, but he is not in this world anymore. But because he is in this state, body is still moving because prarabdham is keeping that body here. Prarabdham is keeping that body here. So here that Kevalanubhavanandasurupam. That is the definition of the Atma. So Kevalanubhav means that samadhi state. And in that samadhi state, Kevalanubhav state, this hearing, sensual activities have all come to an end. You are not hearing anything, and you are particularly hearing, smelling, tasting, or seeing. All these sensual activities have stopped. Practically stopped, because it's not required anymore for them. That's all a part, when you have a mind only, these things will... This you are talking about a very highly elevated state. Not in the beginner. In the elevated, totally elevated state. Senses have all stopped functioning anymore. And they are not looking at the world like the way we look at the world. We look at the world with the glasses on, everywhere, precisely everything we want to know. They are not looking at the world. Because for them, these things don't exist. The form, name and form is all over. Name and form is finished for them. Namarupam does not exist. So therefore, what's happening is there, is that this Kevalanubhavam, what Krishna calls it as Kevalanubhavam, that is flowing through that anandam, Kevalanubhavananda Swarupam. That anandam is flowing through that, through all their senses into this world. Where any senses is only giving them the happiness and that ananda spurti. In other words, what we say, that anandam comes from where? From Atma. Sukham dukham comes from the world and comes through the senses and the mind. It's in the mind you are experiencing happiness and distress, isn't it? Whereas nature of anandam is different, it comes from the soul. So here, instead of coming from the world, now it's coming from Atma. So therefore, the flow has changed, reverse now. Earlier, the sense objects were giving us happiness and it is flowing inwards. Now, the happiness is flowing from the self towards the world. The reverse flow, it is happening now. So that is why it said, Kevalanu Bhavananda Swarupam Almaha. And this is so, and whose Swarupam it is, that is Krishna Swarupam. Krishna Swarupam. And just like we say, Ishwara and Shakti, Shiva and Shakti, we say. The energy and the energetic, isn't it? Some people ask this question. These two things exist. There is a energy and there is an energetic. In reality, there is only one thing. But in that energy and or this that Shivam or Shiva and Shakti as we address to, or Lakshmi and Narayana, or Radha and Krishna, in different ways we address that Shakti and Shiva. energy and the energetic, isn't it? So, when in that Shakti there is no movement, it is steady, it has no movement, then it is called Shivam. And when it moves, when it, there is any movement happens there, it's called Shakti. This is the relationship between Shiva and Shakti. Actually, there is only Shivam. That it exists as awareness. That's the awareness we are talking about. In that awareness, avabhodam, when some change happens there, any kind of change happens, then it's called Shakti. It is called Shakti. Actually, both of them are one and the same thing. And it is on this principle we call it as Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. These three, normally we like to see everything as a person, I know that. And therefore we say, we have got Brahma lives in the Brahma Lokam, Vishnu lives in the Vaikundam, Shiva lives in the Kailasam. We say like that, is it not? So that makes it easy for us. You got a postcode and address, everything. If you can make a postcode, we make a postcode as well, for all of them. But how this, what is this concept of Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva? Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva is this concept. That in that avabhodham, awareness, bodham it is called, when a movement happens there, for the sake of creation, it's called Brahma. For the sake of maintenance, that movement is called Vishnu. For the sake, finally, when everything is withdrawn, it is called Shiva. It's called Shiva. This is the subtle side of that. But normally we won't say that. We will say Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. The Trinity, they call it, isn't it? Trinity. And it is there in other religions also. I think in the Christianity also they have that. Father, Son, the Holy Ghost. And like that, they have all sorts of things. I mean, it's endless, is that. It's all unknown entity to all of us at the moment, is it not? But where did all this come from? It comes from this, that the understanding that awareness is the key. Rishis found out this, that awareness, everything comes from that. Bodham. Anandam avabhodham. Avabhodham it is called. Avabhodham means this awareness of our existence. Something is there in all of us which makes us conscious of our existence, is it not? Astitvam. And that you can't take it away. And that's the only tangible thing we have. We don't have anything else tangible to prove to somebody. You cannot confidently say to anyone, okay, I can tell you about Golokam, Vaikuntham and all that, but all I have read in the book only I can tell you. I haven't been there. And if somebody comes and tells me that all these places are there, I will still believe it to some extent. But I can't fully put my faith in all that, can I? Because I don't know, I haven't seen myself, I haven't experienced it. Where is Golokam? How far is it away from here? Or Vaikuntham, how far is it? Naturally, I will have millions of questions to ask about Golokam. How things are run there, how it's managed there. And if I go there, what will happen? All questions I can ask, but generally I won't ask because I will offend others if you ask that question. So therefore I keep quiet about it. But same thing with Vaikuntham. Some people say that they prefer Vaikuntham because there's much more facilities there. In the sense that opulence, isn't it? People who like opulence, they'll go to Vaikuntham. And people who have got rasas, they say you go to Golokam. Now one who has neither opulence nor rasam, what will you go? What will he do? He go to Kailasam, is it? So all questions you can ask. Where do I find an answer? Who will give you an answer for all this? Don't ask all these questions like the parents tell the children. There was a beautiful about the parents who were saying that the son was sitting, father was sitting, and they were showing a cow in the television. So the child was asking the question to the father, why do they worship this cow? Don't ask all these questions, he said to the child. So it will be an answer like that, only we'll get it. You won't get any other answer than that, better than that. Isn't it? So here, in another way it is presented like this, that Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, that then the water, when, say for example, water when it is stable, it's addressed as Shivam. And when it is starts moving for some reason, for creation purposes, it's called Brahma. And that power behind that, make that water move, that's Vishnu. This is another way of presenting that. Say water is present, When it doesn't move, it is Shivam, Shiva. And because this relation between Shiva and Vishnu is very complicated, it's a very difficult thing to explain also. And when you study Puranams, you will see there what is actually the relation between Shiva and Vishnu. As much strong Vaishnava philosophy is there, the Shaiva Siddhantam is also there in the Vedam. And so much things, and I noticed this program I was telling you, it shows the Shiva first and then finishes the program with Shiva. So there's somebody there who has been reading about Shiva a lot, or Shiva's position in the creation. Otherwise, why that was put in there, I don't know. I couldn't understand that, seeing that program. So, important thing is that Shiva's relationship with Krishna, it is something very unique in the creation process also. We say that although we generally present Shiva is the best Vaishnava, and Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu, and all, we say those things. That's from the Bhagavatam point of view. Bhagavata Puranam present it like that. But if you look at, you will see same Sri Narada Maharshi, four Kumaras and others taking instructions from Shiva in the Kailasam, being instructed. Krishna goes to Kailasam when Krishna didn't have children after the marriage. Krishna goes to Himalayas and performs meditation of Shiva to have children. And that is how Pradyumna was born later. Because Pradyumna, you remember the story, if you read Bhagavatam, you'll notice this. Pradyumna is Kamadeva, Cupid. He was burned in the fire of the ashes of Shiva. And he could not get another birth. So before giving birth to him again, Krishna thought that he should take permission from Shiva. So therefore he performs penances to please Shiva. Shiva appears and then he talks to Shiva about giving birth to Pradyumna. And with Shiva's permission, he gives birth to Pradyumna in the form of the Cupid. He gets birth as Pradyumna, and then he comes and takes birth in the Shambharasura's fish. He was born, and then Riti Devi brought him up. All that story is in the Bhagavatam. You can see there. So you will start thinking many, many things. What is relationship with Krishna and Shiva? So it is, the thing is this, that Krishna and Shiva are known different. Shivasya hridayam Vishnu, Vishnasya hridayam Shiva. There is so close that relationship also. And even in that particular incidence in the churning of the milk ocean, when Krishna took that Mohini Murthy's form, Krishna by nature looks a little feminine, isn't it? When you look at the face and all that. So all Krishna did was, he took his yellow garment, Pidambaram, and dressed up and changed everything to appear like a beautiful woman in the form of Mohini Murthy. And when demigods, they saw this change of form, they didn't get too disturbed over it. Sri Narada Maharshi mentioned this to Shiva in the Kailasam. And Shiva says, I would like to see that form of Krishna's form, of the Mohini form. Then Shiva comes there with Sri Parvati and with the children. They came to see this form of Mohini Murthy. After seeing the form, Shiva's mind moved, got disturbed in the sense that you can see what happened in the Bhagavatam after that. Mohini was running and Shiva was following, forgotten that Sri Parvati was with him. Everything has happened. And then finally, Krishna says to Shiva, if you look at the Bhagavad, you will see some verses there, where he says to him, you are not different from me. I know who you are, he says to him. You're not different from me. I know who you are, he says. But this has happened only to show to the world that this is a very powerful force that can change people's mind. So Vastu is one. So Rudra is addressed as that. So all the three are actually one. That one Vastu, you're calling him as Brahma in the creation process, calling him as Vishnu in the maintenance process, and in the destruction process you're calling him as Shiva. That's all. But Vastu is one. Not to see these three differences, this is the mistake happened to Daksha. Daksha could not understand this principle, and Daksha offended Shiva. Is it not? Heavily offended. And he had to pay a very heavy price for that. And the same problem happened to Banasura. Banasura offended Pradyumna, Aniruddha. There, in the name of that, he was saying that he was a Shiva's devotee. So, this Shaivam, Vaishnavam and all that is not something that you can take it so lightly and think that this is right and this is wrong. No. Bhagavatam wouldn't accept that because they very clearly spoken that Daksha's main fault was that he offended Shiva, not knowing who he is. Not knowing who he is. And that Sri Parvati told him that you don't know who he is. But the way he treated Shiva was gone across the red line. In other words, he says there in the Bhagavatam, if you look, you will see what Sri Parvati had to say about that. And Sri Parvati says to him Shri Devi Vacham, fourth canto, fourth chapter, 14th verse. 4:14. Yadvacharam nama giriridam nranam sagaral prasangad akhamashukhanditel pavitra girtim tam alangyashasanam bhavanaho dveshti shivam shivedara. Very, very strong warning. Then Yadvacharam, these two letters, Shiva. Nama giriridam nranam, the power of those two letters you don't know. The name, holy name of Shiva. Sagaral prasangal akhama shuhandidal. By chanting the holy name of Shiva, all your sinful reactions are wiped out. Akhama shuhandidal. Sagaral prasangal akhama shuhandidal. What else? And his glory, pavitra girtim dham alangya shasanam. Pavitra girti. He has no black spot in his glories. Pavitra girti it is, so pure. Well-known personality he is. Tam alangya shasanam. And if he has decided something, that's it. There's no more, nobody can go beyond than that. Tam alangya shasanam bhavanaho dveshti shivam shivedara. And you have created this enmity towards him. She is asking her father. And it is up to him that bhavanaho dveshti shivam shivedara. He is the most auspicious well-wisher of everybody. And you have gone and created this enmity towards him. Bhavanaho dveshti shivam shivedara. And then there is a number of verses there to talking about Shiva there. To Daksha. Starting from the verse 11 onwards, right up to 23. He spoke about that, warning Daksha that you are upsetting someone which will harm your very existence. What was the result? Lost his head. That's not. And keeping the goat's head, he had to walk around in this world. Father-in-law, that's okay. But father-in-law had to do this in front of the son-in-law. Son-in-law wouldn't tolerate that kind of nonsense. That because why Shiva was upset? She was upset because that Shiva told Sri Parvati not to go. Shiva knew that this will happen. After all, what else? Jagat Guru, isn't it? Charachara Guru, he says there. He knew everything what's going to happen. And when all that, the Trayagam happened, and finally when Sri Parvati gave up the body in the fire of the yoga process, she was such a yogi, isn't it? Sri Parvati is yoga personified. In that yogic power, she sat there in front of Daksha and body burned into ashes. Imagine that power of yoga power in her. So when this happened, Virabhadra was created. Virabhadra went there and smashed the whole place up, isn't it? And then all of them start coming to Kailasam to see Shiva, Brahma and Sri Narada Maharshi, all the demigods together. And when they were coming to see to Shiva, they were chanting the holy name. Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya. They were chanting and coming to see. Brahma has told everybody, be very respectful when we go there. Don't show any kind of disrespect, because if he decides that, then it's not going to happen anymore. They wanted Daksha to come back to life. They came back and they asked everything what they want. Bhrigu lost his teeth. Bhrigu lost his teeth, and so many others are so various things. Somebody's eyes have gone. So many different things. They all wanted to come back to life. But there, Maitreya Maharshi says there, all these people had their request to put in. But nobody cared to find out what happened to Sri Parvati. What has happened to Sri Parvati? Nobody mentioned about this. And Shiva understood this is the type of people they are who come to visit him. They were all selfish interest. Only self-interest was there. And that is in the Bhagavatam where Maitreya Maharshi mentions this. That Shiva was not pleased at all that nobody inquired what has happened to Sri Parvati. What has happened? Because Shiva was very upset about that. What has happened to Sri Parvati? So that Shakti that is present, which is not moving, that Shakti is Shiva. And when it moves, it is Shakti. And Shakti is nothing but a part of that Shiva. It cannot separate itself. But without Shakti, Shivam is there. But when it is stable, when it is not having any movement, you can see here that without Shiva, there is no Shakti. But without Shakti, Shiva can exist. So that is why this question came up that is it possible for Shakti to remain without Shiva, or Shiva can remain without Shakti? And in one sense, it is true, because that in Ramana Maharshi answered like this. He said, in she there is he, but in he there is no she. That's how he put it there. So, but you have to remember, it is not spoken in terms of male and female. It's not in that aspect it is spoken. You should not bring it into that level. That is in the bodily level, he and she. But what he was trying to say there, that everyone here, whether male or female, is all female. Purusha and Sri is all female. Because here, when we are saying male, female, it's all in the field of Shakti. Shakti's field we are talking about, because this body, on the basis of the body you are addressing it. This is not based on the body, this is spoken. Because it is purely from the poetic point of view, poetic way that we spoken like this, Purusha and Stri. But all male and female here is all Shakti. Shakti and Shiva is spoken in terms of consciousness. Consciousness, when consciousness manifests in some form, it becomes Shakti. When consciousness of its own, it is Shiva. That's how we have to understand. Not in the way we make it here. Male and female, not in that way. Here everybody is female. Why? Because we are all part of Shakti. Shakti. Therefore, we are addressed as, because as long as you have a body here, that means movement has happened. Therefore, we are a product of Shakti, not Shiva. But Shiva is present inside us, and therefore Shakti is functioning. But overall, we are always Shakti here, in this form. So, we'll have a short break. Swipe us for.
Chedo darpanamarjanam baumahada vagninurvapanam shreyakai davachandriya vidaranam vidyavadhu jivanam anandambudivardhanam pradivada purnamradaswadhanam sarvapnasubanam param vijayade shri krishna sangirtanam madhari bahudha nija sarva shakti tatrampila nida smaranena kala Shamahajani, Nayanam Galada Shudharaya Gira Pulagayam Nishidam Kadava Bhutavan Namagrahane Bhavishyadim
युगायुधन्निमेषेण चक्षुषा प्राविशायितं शून्यायिदं जगत् सर्वं गोविन्दविरहे नमे अश्लिष्य वा पादरदां विनष्टु माम् अदर्शनमर्महदां करोतु वा यदा तदा वा विरदागलम्बनो प्राणनाथास्मयवनापराम्
When we say that everything here is Shakti, there is no male-female, when we say it's based on the body, isn't it? Purusha-stri. But actually, everything is Shakti. Everything is Shakti here. Why is it called everything is Shakti? Because all that's happening here is in the field of Maya. Maya is Shakti. It is in her field, that is why anything within Maya is always Shakti. Is always Shakti. and what is Purusha then? Purusha is this, that when everything is over, when Maya is finished, when you come out of Maya, then what remains at that time is Purusha. When you are released from the Maya, then what remains is Purusha. That is how male-female is understood there. Here we are based on the body, we are saying male and female. But actually in the Shastram, when they say, when you are inside Maya, everybody is female. When you have come out of Maya, you are Purusha. That's the difference. Whether it is a male or female doesn't matter. Once you come out of Maya, Maya is Prakriti, Prakriti is female. So as long as you are within the grip of Prakriti, you are still female, whether you have a male body or a female body. That is the principle. And that is why, so everything is Shakti here. Everything is Shakti here. And that is Devi. And that is why Krishna says there, Devi Hesha Gunamayi Mama Maya. When he says that, he is not addressing as man and woman to us. He says, you are all in Maya. Whether you are male or female, you are all in Maya. And that Maya is difficult to cross. Come out of this Maya. Devi Hesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Durateya Mam Evaye Prabhadyande Maya Medam Tarandide. In other words, when you realize the self, when your identification have lost with the body, the mind, intelligence, ego, senses, matter completely, and you come to the platform of the soul, that is that mamevayam prabhadyande. That is when you cross Maya. That means you have come out of the grip of Maya. You are not anymore under the jurisdiction of Maya. What you find there, that in the Ekadasha Skandam, when the Navayogis spoke with the Nimi, they asked this question, is it not? That Bhagavad Dharmam, and there you will see this issue coming up again. What does this mean? That that who has crossed the Maya? that crossing over Maya, that question comes. Bhagavad Dharmam, symptoms of a devotee, then Maya. And the king is asking in the third chapter, 17th, Yathaidam Aishwaryam Maya Dustaram Agridalmabi Tarandi Anjas Tula Dhiyo Maharsha Idam Uchadam. That verse. He's saying there that Yathaidam Aishwaryam Maya, this Ishwari Maya, Maya's different names, is it not? She has got the name as in the Bhagavadam. You will see Ambiga, Narayani, Ishani, and Chandiya. So many names mentioned there in the when Maya appeared, isn't it? So in that Maya's field, all these different names are Durga. That's another name of her. We are all inside that. And Tarandi Anjastula Dhyo Maharsham Idamuchadam. That those who have got very gross intelligence, like all of us, Stula Dhyo. How do we come out of this Maya, which is not even possible to know what it is? Her power, isn't it? Akadina Kadana Patiyasi Maya. Nobody understands. She can make you realize what is not possible, she can make it happen. Whole world is busy under her spell. She has put this blanket on us. That you remember that in the Krishnavadaram, Krishna's appearance time, that Vasudeva is walking towards Gokulam with baby in hand, and she put whole place to sleep, including Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Devi and all that. Otherwise, how could Vasudeva could have exchanged the baby there? When Vasudeva walked there, that there was no... The baby was crying, nobody was woken up. Nanda Maharaj is standing there and sleeping outside the house. Nanda Maharaj is standing there. All the senior members of the Nanda Maharaj's family members and other cowherd men, they were all standing outside. And Vasudeva walked in. What did he see? He see all of them standing there and sleeping. Her power. How did Vasudevan get out from the prison? Because Kamsa has posted these two powerful men to guard the prison. And when Vasudeva got up, they fell asleep. And with their spears in the hand, they were standing and sleeping. The door got opened of the prison house. Vasudeva walks out. When Vasudeva got up, immediately first thing the shackles of the chain, that got released. Who is doing all these things? She is doing that. Maya is doing that. It's her power to show where she stands in all these things. And then she had to do everything in Krishnavadaram. You will see so many things she had to do. She had to transfer Balram from Devaki's womb to Rohini's womb. She had to do that. And Balram should not know that this has happened. That is the interesting side of that. Krishna said to Sri Parvati, to Devi, that when you are doing this, Balram should not know, because if he gets to know, he will get upset that he is being disturbed from his sleep there. And this created all the questions, isn't it? How can have one person, two mother? The Bhagavatam throughout, Devaki is Devi's son. But then you say he has come from Rohini, and Parikshit asked this question, how could it happen? That one person has two mother. How did that? So Srila Brahmarshi says there, it was the same problem because she was briefed very well before she left there from the spiritual world. Krishna told her that without Balaram, Adishesha's knowledge, you should transfer him from the womb of Devaki Devi to Rohini Devi. That was all done. That is her duty. Plus, allowing to carry Krishna from here to Gokulam, all the way from Mathura to Gokulam, that was all her responsibility, to make sure that nobody knew about this transfer, including Kamsa. She didn't know about it. And she had to put everybody into sleep. Everybody was put into sleep. And then the transfer happened, brought back Krishna from there, and Yogamaya brought back her from there, and brought her back and handed over to Devaki Devi. Then only Kamsa came to know that Devaki had a child born. After that it was informed. And then Kamsa comes with his chest up to sort out the issue. By then it is too late. And then Kamsa catches her feet and throw her on this rock to kill her. And then she didn't fall, she went straight up to the sky. Sayurashta Mahabhuja, with eight hands standing in the sky and talking to him. All that is there in the 10th canto, you can read that. So I'm saying that this Maya, Maya is difficult to understand, and therefore the only way is that, he has explained here also, Bhagavata, how to cross over Maya, those things are spoken there. So coming back to this, Krishna is saying here, Devi Kesha Gunamai. that Gunamayi Maya is Devi. Devi, it is divine. Maya is not ordinary, it's a divine power. Is it? Divine power. And it is her field, this world is. It is her mandalam field. And and in that, when you are in these three states, which one? Vacant state, dream state, deep sleep, you are always in her field. When you come out of these three states and come to the Turiyam state or the Samadhi state, then you have become Shivam. You are not anymore Shakti. Up to vacant state, dream state, deep sleep, you are always in the field of Shakti. Once you have come out of it and come to the Samadhi state or Turiyam state, then you are in the field of Shivam. Shivam. So Shivam and Shakti, we have to understand it that way. And that is the state, there is no more movement inside. Actually, they are one and the same thing, but because of the movement, we have come to the deep sleep state, and then to the dream state, and finally the most gross existence, which is the vacant state. Vacant state is our most gross existence. Deep sleep is much more subtle existence. Why? Because we don't have any of our gross things with us. Gross body, mind, intelligence, ego, all that is gone. We become, the most gross form is this gross existence with the gross body. When we have got everything. When you download the body, gross body, you come to the dream state. When you download the gross body, the mind, intelligence, ego, senses, everything, you come to the deep sleep state. But still, in the deep sleep state, there is avidya there. Ignorance is there. So, when you cross that barrier also and gone into the samadhi state, that means you have completely escaped from the prakriti or maya. Up to that point, maya is still there. Maya is still there. So, that movement or vibration that they use in the word, is kampanam. Akampanam. So that is what is, when that movement happens in there, that is called Srishti. Creation is nothing but that. So when there is a vibration, that is called a creation. If there is no vibration, movement there, there is no creation either. So when it moves, it creation happens. And if you ask any reason for that, you can't give any reason why that movement happens there. For example, in the night time we are sleeping. We are sleeping. So, if you ask a question, why do I wake up in the morning? What answer can you give? Why am I waking up in the morning? You can see this if you give attention to that. That, why am I waking up and how do I wake up? How would you explain that? This waking up process in the morning. And who is waking up? Suppose I want to sleep for like our Muchukunda wanted. Or Kumbhakarna. I just want to sleep whole rest of the life. I don't want to wake up because as soon as I wake up from the deep sleep, all the problems are coming. So I may as well sleep till the body is ready to go and let the body go and then I can go after that whatever I want. But that is also not possible, is it not? Because in the morning, somebody is waking you up. It says that's enough now. You wake up. Come back to the life. So, so something has happened inside some moment. Vibration has happened. That is what made us to wake up. Made us to wake up in the hand. So when in that dissolved state, in the deep sleep state, there was a movement. So practically you can see this creation, maintenance, dissolution, all these three things are happening inside each one of us, all the time. Waking up is that creation begins. And daytime in the vacant state is that maintenance state, when it's happening. And when you go back into dissolve yourself, when the ego dissolves in the deep sleep, that is the destruction. So, Srishti, Sthiti, Samharam, all the three states happens in the Samashti level and it happens in the Veshti level. Veshti level means, in the what do they call it? Micro and macro. Yeah, that micro one is the one which is happening within us, isn't it? So, when that movement happens, vibration happens, we wake up in the morning. And then what happens? And then the mind starts opening up. Mind starts opening up. So the mind, which was lying fully dissolved in that deep sleep state, when it wakes up and starts opening it, when you starts waking up little bit, half open state, that's called the dream state. And when it is fully open, that is a vacant state. You can see that in your own experience, that when you go back to sleep also it's like that. When you go from your vacant state, slowly, one by one, you withdraw from the world. is it not? We don't go from vacant state to deep sleep straight away. There's a lot of things happen in between. Particularly dream state happens. Everybody gets some dreams. And then only when you are very fortunate, you get out of that dream state and go to deep sleep. So that is when the changes that's happening, if you observe in the mind, you will notice there that when the mind is half open, it is dream state. When the mind is fully open, it is vacant state. When the mind is fully closed, that's called a deep sleep. In Vedantam, that is how they explain that things. So when the mind is fully open, waken up, that is called a jagrat state. For example, in the vacant state, you can be half open mind. That's why sometimes you're not fully open the mind yet. Halfway you are listening and halfway you are thinking about something else. And the dream is going on. So dream state is not only the dream what you see when you close your eyes. Dream state means even with your eyes wide open you can dream. Is it not? Is it not? When you are eyes wide open, you are still thinking about at home what's happening, what's prasadam tonight, or what time I have to go to work. So many other thoughts also will become, that is also part of the dream it is. It's not the reality, it's all part of the dream. So dream state can happen even while waking up. So this Jagrat Sapnam Sushupti, they are not 100% broken like that. There is Jagrat Sapnam, and then from Sapnam you go to deep sleep when Sushupti comes, there you are completely gone out of this. But Jagrat and Sapnam is always mixed. It gets mixed up very much. So So this state when we call that when the mind comes back in full, it's called vacant state, is it not? When the mind becomes completely in shanti, completely in peaceful state, no thought waves developing inside, that is called nishkambam. See that in the verse? Yam agnyushnavam nitya bhoda swarupam mana chakshuradinya bhoda atmagani pravartandam ashritya nishkambam ekam sa nityobalabdhi swarupoham atma. The word nishkambam, that nishkambam means that. Nishkambam means there is no kambanam. Kambanam means thought waves. There is no thought waves. So, so when there is no kambanam, kambanam is the word. Nishkambanam, there is no kambanam. Kambanam means this vibration inside. That means there is no thought waves inside. And that means there is no shakti present there. Only if the mind is there, the modes of nature will be there. Otherwise it cannot be. Three modes of material nature. There is only Shivam. There is no shakti. So when you say escape from Maya means what? It's a difficult thing to understand, isn't it? People are inside Maya and then you escape from Maya. We are all inside Maya, but some people have escaped from Maya. So escaping is not with the gross body. Escaping is in the consciousness. If the mind is completely gone, you can say that you have escaped from Maya. You have escaped from Maya. That's the way it happens. So when that vibration happens, or kambanam, when that happens, that what happens then? Multitude of things comes. Multiplicity happens. Originally, when there is no mind, there is only one thing, consciousness. But when the mind comes, many things comes. That's when we feel that there are so many things in this world. Vidya vinaya sambandhe brahmane gavi hastini shuni jaiva shavagaja pandita samadarshina. Now you know this word samadarshina means. Samadarshina does not mean that you will all have different bodies and I'll start seeing everyone equal. How can I see equal? It's not possible. One is male, one is female, one is old, one is young, one is boy, one is girl. All differences. There is no equality. Where does samadarshitvam comes then? Samadarshitvam comes in this way. That when the mind completely disappears, then you're not seeing that person anymore in the form of body. Pure consciousness. And therefore everything is equal. It is by seeing consciousness in everyone that you are seeing equality. Not by seeing through. Just like if I keep on seeing the body, everyone in the bodily level, then I say, I have samadarshitam. That will not happen. That will not happen. How can it be? It's not possible. Samadarshitam won't happen. So that is why, so you can see here, the comparison is that what you experience is sushupti, that is samadarshitam in deep sleep state. And that you have to bring it back into the wakened state. That experience in the sushupti. So in the deep sleep state, you don't have that duality in us, isn't it? Male, female, old and young, black and white, or Indian, American, or European, whatever. All those things, because there is no bodily identity at that time. There is no body, and as well as there is no man, woman, in the deep sleep state. That goes away from us. From ourselves it goes. You are not a man, woman, in the deep sleep, isn't it? Or the women, not man or woman, nothing like that. So, but as soon as the mind wakes up, it brings back these identities of man, woman, body, everything. So, when the mind starts moving, this is why that nishkambam word, what he has used there? Pravartandam ashritya nishkambam ekam, he says. Pravartandam ashritya nishkambam ekam, that nishkambanam. In other words, vibration of the mind has to completely stop to get that state. To get that state. Because as soon as that vibration happens, what happens? That I am separate from you, you are separate from me, world is separate, all the problems of this world is separate, and it increases further and further. You see that? From that state of nishkambam egam, he says, there's only one state where there is no vibration, nishkambam egam. Pravartandam ashritya nishkambam egam. That pravartandam ashritya, if you dependent on that, that mind which has come back and it's showing its power, then it will create all these various phenomena. What happened? The world comes, with the world all the problems comes, and problem means different problems, is it not? It's a nice, interesting way the Bhikshu has spoken about these problems in this world. He's saying to us, Bhikshu's words. Bhikshu's saying that when looking at the world, he saw, he's talking about the householder. Householder has got all the problems, isn't it? All the problems in this world. He said that in householder life, you can observe this yourself, you know. Is there any day when you don't have a problem as a householder? There is no time. If you have no children, then you feel, oh, I have no children. Householder's problems, I'm saying. Then he got children. When he got children, then the whole problem of educating them and giving them some sense of direction in this world, problem starts there itself. So you start thinking, oh, before I had children, at least life I had, I didn't have this problem. I have invited another problem on me now. So they had come. Anyway, they are there now. Can't do anything about it. Then educating the biggest problem. We don't know what education to give to them. Wherever you look around, it's all this darkness. Education, so-called education. Because once you get them through this education system, they're finished. Then you don't expect anything from the good to happen. All you want to do is to leave this place as early as possible. Seeing the education that you were given to your the best children of the world. So there you have no choice, you're gone with that. After that they have grown up. Is the problem over? No. Then somehow or the other, boy, girl, whoever is to get them married, householder, get them married somehow. Then you find out husband, wife is not getting on well. There is problem. You didn't get a good wife or you didn't get a good husband, whatever it is, problem starts there. And then we're thinking that, oh, they didn't have any children. So the next problem. So after this, by the time this whole process you pass through, about them having children, and then worrying about their health, the grandchildren's health, and then you have to get them through the very same system when they have gone, you're worrying about that also. Like this, your whole life is occupied with all these problems, and by the time it's all over, the body starts giving problem. Your own body is giving problem. So Bhikshu said that I've learned one good thing, he said. And you have to pay your obeisances to Bhikshu, not to Krishna, Bhikshu, for telling us this thing so openly to us.
Then Krishna says to us through Bhikshu Gita, he's telling to point out that if you think that you can sort out all these problems and then come to Krishna consciousness, it is not going to happen. It simply won't happen. It simply is not going to happen because there is no possibility of doing that. Your lifetime is so short and in this body, and the problems are many. And if you try to sort out all these problems, what you're going to have in life, you think it is going to be sorted. It will never be sorted. It's not possible. You just have to learn this one thing, that only spiritual life is the only thing real here. Everything else is will come and go. That is prarabdham. There you can't do anything about it. They will come and they will give you all the trouble. And rarely you will see, rarely means impossible to see one householder who doesn't go through these problems in this world. You won't see one householder. If there is no problem, there will be problem between husband and wife. Something will be there to keep you occupied, to absorb in some way or the other. So therefore, Bhikshu Gidam, why Bhikshu Gidam is important? Because Bhikshu is telling us that I have learned this hard lesson, but it took a while for me. Therefore, because he went through all these things, his vairagyam was very, very good. That is why he is able to sing that song, Bhikshu Gita, and it's coming from the heart, from his own realizations. So anyway, we'll come to that later. So coming to this, that in the consciousness, when I said all these things, the reason was that in the consciousness, there is not many. Many comes when the mind comes. Many comes when the mind comes. Mind creates this many, and otherwise nishkambam ekam. He says there. For Sukadeva Goswami, there is only one. Hastamalaka, there is only one. For Rishabhadeva, there is only one. Dattatreya, there is only one. Jadamarada, there is only one. There is not many. Many is a creation product of the mind. Many is a product of the mind. So, when many comes, problem starts. Problem starts. So, because you can see here that not anybody feels that I am two or three, isn't it? I am only one, I feel. So, similarly, on a psychological plane, you may feel, when you are gone a little bit funny, that in that sense. But, vastu, on which I am dependent on completely, saying here, pravartandam ashritya nishkambam ekam. That is nishkambam ekam. That bodham is one. Bodham is not many. Bodham is not many. Bodham is one. Awareness is one. So, just like you can't separate the heat and the fire, similarly, Atma cannot be separated from Brahman. Atma cannot be separated from Brahman. And as he mentioned before, the most important thing to realize about Atma is this nature of awareness, which is a part of Atma, which you cannot separate out from Atma. If there is heat, there is fire, there is heat. Similarly, if there is Atma, there is awareness. There is awareness. So, Atma, the surupam of Atma itself is experience. So, that is why I say here, manachakshuradi. Manachakshuradinya bhodalmagani, he says there. Manasa, chakshusa, that means here, that manasa and chakshuradi indriyam, that means all the other senses, they are all dead matter, jadam. Mind is jadam, buddhi is jadam, ahangaram is jadam, only consciousness is chetana or awareness. Awareness is the only living force in that. Mind is a jadam thing. That is why it gets destroyed. Even though it looks subtle to us, mind, at the moment, we think it is subtle. But it's not subtle. It is jadam because it gets destroyed. Mind gets destroyed. Intelligence gets destroyed, therefore it's jadam. Anything that gets destroyed is jadam. That is how you have to see. Not that dead matter is jadam. Anything that gets destroyed is jadam. So that's why he's saying here, manachakshuradinya bhodalmagani, he says there. So, similarly, all our senses, eyes, ears, five senses of knowledge, senses of action, they're all jadam. They're all jadam. So, the eyes and the nose, we are thinking that eyes and nose are bringing all the information to us. And
So, actually, eyes and the mind, eyes and the ears, they are not the one which is seeing and hearing. For example, say for example, I took the eyes from here and put it on somebody else, some other place in the body. It won't work, would it? It won't work. It won't work. Say I took open this eye and surgery done and took out the eye from there. And I checked all the connections, like the electrician checks all the cable connections, isn't it? When they do the cabling. So similarly, I pulled out all the cable wires connected. And if I take it from there and extend that cables and wires, what's inside, to somewhere else in the body, let me have the eye on the leg, for instead of in the face, and I wired up all that thing here, still it won't work. Why? Why is that? That's what he says there. Manachakshuradinya bhodalpagani. It has to have its location in a particular place because it is not working. It's only working because of the presence of Andaryami inside. Andaryami inside. So therefore, they are not doing the job. They are not doing the job. We think they are doing the job. The senses are doing the job. For example, if you take the, say, ear, for example. This ear is not very good here. I moved from here to somewhere else in the body. It doesn't work. Doesn't work. Because it won't hear. Because a dead person, even if you give him the best music, it won't make any difference to him. We are doing so many things, isn't it? But just like we're chanting the mantra to a dead person, what happens? Person has gone. He has left the body already, isn't it? So therefore, it won't have any impact on the person, even if you chant the mantra. So there is somebody who is inside everybody, who is sitting there and listening when you are speaking. And that is that some person is the one who comes out, who listens, is the one who comes out, who sees the things, is the one who comes out, who smells, who tastes, and who touches. And that's him. That is him. And that is why, if he has gone, abhodagalpagani, he says here, that manachakshuradinya abhodagalpagani, he says, abhodagalpagani. So, jadavastu, it has to have that awareness, is it not? That is what makes the difference. Jadam vastu, it has no awareness. That includes all the senses, mind, intelligence, everything. Because that does not know that it exists. Awareness means awareness of the existence. Jadavastu does not know, eyes does not know, nose does not know. Abhodagalpagani. So, all the mind, the senses, all of them are abhodavastu. It has no bodham. Bodham is not present there. It is jadavastu and they are made of five material elements. Annamayam, pranamayam, manomayam, vijnanamayam, anandamayam. And you can see this if you have problems to understand this. Senses are all made of material elements. Material elements. Mind also is made of material elements. That is why, because mind comes from the food. When you eat the food, it's the food that subtle form. It is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita very clearly, is it not? In the 14th chapter, 13th chapter, where the mind is coming from. Mind comes from the food. So the mind is coming, that means it's a gross thing. Food is a gross thing, isn't it? So that food, what we eat, the subtle form turns into mind. You know that most gross form turns into the gets destroyed, and subtle form, subtle than that, gets turned into flesh and the blood and all other things, flesh in the body, bones and all that. And the most subtle than that, it goes in three directions. The third one, the most subtle form, becomes the mind. And it is from that sushmamsham, that subtle form of the food, mind gets its strength. That is why in the all this fasting we do for Ekadashi, we don't fast, we feast. But why we are meant to fast is this is not to strengthen the mind. If you eat a lot, you won't be able to do many things in spiritual side. For example, spiritual advancement means in order to weaken the mind, therefore fasting. So that, because mind gets its strength from the food, so restrict the food for that reason. Similarly, in order to reflect on all the Shastram, if you want to study Shastram, Bhagavatam, Brahmasutram and all that, to have that sharpening of the mind, you need to restrict the eating. You need to restrict the eating. Because if you feed a lot, suppose I had a big, good feast, and then if I take any Upanishad and start reading, what will happen? Even without food, we are sleeping. So imagine if you had a food as well. Even without food, we get good sleep. So you can imagine, that is why they say that if you want to spiritually absorb, food is to be restricted. There is no other way. There is no other way. So, because there is that it appears as though your vyavaharam is going on, like even though they are dead things, like dead matter, which one, the senses and the mind and all, but it appears as though that it is working like a living force, isn't it? Because the presence of the Atma behind, that is why it's able to function like that. And because of the contact with that living force, it is able to operate in the way it is operating at the moment. So, and that bodham, what is available to us, is nityovalabdhi swarupoham Atma, that our eternal awareness as existence, as Atma, is me, says Hastamalaka. So, and upalabdhi swarupam, and that is like the sky he mentioned before, and unlimited, and upalabdhi, available to me, says Hastamalaka there. So, that is that verse we see in here. That yam agnushnam van nitya bhoda swarupam mana chakshuryadhinya bhodhalmagani pravartandam ashritya nishkambam egam sam nityobalabdhi swarupoham alma. You will see all the time, this is just realization, what he is saying, isn't it? Astamalaka's realization, that is. He is trying to pick us up and put us there, in that state. That's what he is trying to do. It's up to us to go along with it to the extent possible, and it will be difficult in the beginning, but he is telling us, this is not your state, that's your state. He is trying to pick us up and put us there. So nityobalabdhi swarupoham atma. Swarupoham atma. So we have a lot to discuss. We'll see that tomorrow now. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.